Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, September 16th, 2019. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250, and our access code is 449-389-pound. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Tonight's scripture reading, we're going to pick up where we left off last week. We're in the Gospel of Mark. Gospel of Mark, chapter 4, verses 1 through 20. And he, Jesus, began again to teach by the seaside, and there was gathered unto him a great multitude, so that he entered into a ship and sat in the sea, and the whole multitude was by the sea on the land. And he taught them many things by parables, and said unto them in his doctrine, Hearken, behold, there went forth a sower to sow. And it came to pass, as he sowed, some seeds fell by the wayside, and the fowls of the air came and devoured it up. And some fell on stony ground, where it had not much earth, and immediately it sprang up, because it had no depth of earth. But when the sun was up, it was scorched, and because it had no root, it withered away. And some fell among the thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked it, and it yielded no fruit. And other fell on good ground, and did yield fruit, that sprang up and increased, and brought forth some 30, some 60, and some 100. And he said unto them, He that hath ears to hear, let him hear. And when he was alone, they that were about him with the 12 asked of him the parable. And he, Jesus, said unto them, Unto you it is given to know the mystery of the kingdom of God, but unto them that are without, all these things are done in parables, that seeing they may see and not perceive, and hearing they may hear and not understand, lest at any time they should be convinced, and their sins should be forgiven them. And he said unto them, Know ye not this parable? And how then will ye know all parables? The sower soweth the word, and these are they by the wayside, where the word is sown. But when they have heard, Satan cometh immediately, and taketh away the word that was sown in their hearts. And these are they likewise which are sown by the stony ground. And when they had heard the word, immediately received it with gladness. And they have no root in themselves, and so endure but for a time. Afterwards, when affliction or persecution ariseth for the word's sake, immediately they are offended. And these are they which are sown among the thorns, such as hear the word, and the cares of this world, and the deceitfulness of the riches, and of the lust of other things entering in, choke the word, and it becometh unfruitful. And these are they which are sown on the good ground, such as hear the word, and receive it, and bring forth fruit, some 30-fold, some 60, and some 100. Gospel of Mark, chapter 4, verses 1 through 20. Okay. Tonight, we're going to kind of do sort of a recap of what exactly it is that we're doing. We're going to talk particularly about our plan and also the joinders that we've been filing, we're going to be starting to file with the courts. And so I'd like to try to keep tonight's program really focused on questions and comments on exactly what our plan is. And any ideas on how we can get to that point of critical mass. We're trying to get out there now to, be at as many radio programs as possible, YouTube programs, and so on and so forth. But again, let's take a look at, I guess the place to start really is the problem. We the people have been robbed. I mean, seriously, we have seriously been robbed. We've been robbed of our heritage. We've been robbed of our courts. We've been robbed of our law. We've been robbed of our rights. Our heritage that people believe that we have, heritage really brings us back to where our liberty comes from. It brings us back under the law is where it brings us. They teach in law school, in the Bar Association particularly. I don't know about other schools that might be, separate from the bar. All lawyers do take bar tests, but nevertheless, not everybody goes to a bar-controlled school, I've found out. But lawyers are taught that we're under Roman civil law, and that traces its findings right back to Babylon. Civil law is really a lure to control people. We have lost our heritage because we are a people that should be under the law. Our heritage is fake. Our history, they've changed our history, and our history is fake. Even our roots and the foundation of our country is fake, has become fake. They claim that we're a democracy when, in fact, we're a republic. You know, we have a constitution, the United States Constitution, but we really don't have government doesn't seem to operate or run according to the Constitution, the authority by which we've given our three branches of government, particularly in the federal level, the authority to act. And they've gone far beyond what we've given them to act upon. We have lost our unalienable rights. They have changed our rights to civil rights. They're no longer unalienable. People don't really find that out until they end up in court one day and they discover that no matter what you say to try to bring the Constitution to bear in that courtroom, it falls on deaf ears. We are judged by judges who are political individuals or appointed individuals. They're political, whether they're appointed or elected. On the federal level, of course, they're appointed, but that's a whole political process in its own. They maintain the status quo. They do not maintain the law. They're not interested in the law. Our money is fake. Our courts are fake. We're in jurisdictions unknown constantly. Our news is fake. You know, President Trump has been speaking about that for quite some time. You know, we in America, we have truly lost our way. We've lost our morality. We've lost our blessings from God. We've become so dumbed down, we don't understand or even know what the job of Congress truly is and what authority, what their jurisdiction is. People don't even think about what their jurisdiction is. Congress doesn't even seem to know what their jurisdiction is. The Supreme Court doesn't pay any respect or an understanding to their jurisdiction. The Constitution is very clear that our court system falls under equity and law, and both equity and law is a far cry from civil law. Civil law is a total different animal, so to speak. We don't really understand, you know, the law of the land. And the law of the land, of course, is our law that we are under. It is the Constitution. And the law of God by which we run our courts or should be running our courts by. People don't understand the political process. We don't understand the judicial process. We don't know how government works because they don't tell us. They don't teach us. You know, a long time ago when I was very young, I heard the saying reality is as one perceives it. And I found that, of course, to be quite true. And we all share a particular reality here as Americans. And it's a fiction. It's not true. It's fake, what we've been taught. The truth has been hidden for quite some time. And when reality is controlled on that level, and we share that same reality, which is fiction, that clearly proves conspiracy. The things that we were just speaking about, heritage, history, roots, foundation, democracy, constitution, et cetera, these are the things that define liberty. These are the things that we, the people, have lost. We've lost because of our ignorance. You know, back before our country was founded, you know, we had slaves. And, of course, in the first part of our nation, we continue with slaves, and numerous people were working diligently to get rid of it. They knew they couldn't get rid of slavery when they were, you know, bringing America together, becoming the United States. But there was a serious plan to eventually get rid of slavery, and they knew they'd have to wait maybe another generation or two before they'd be able to accomplish that. And so it did take a few generations past before America was able to do this. America didn't on its own pursue slavery. Slavery was brought upon us by Britain. And of course, Britain, England, the country that we were under before we became the United States, they sold slaves. They didn't have slaves in Britain, though. And this whole thing with slavery was, of course, money. That was part of it. But also to demoralize us. That's another thing. And, you know, especially when we became a nation, slavery was a big thorn in our side. But this whole process came about, you know, we go back to 1865 is when the 13th Amendment disappeared. And the 13th Amendment was really an important amendment. Let me read what the original 13th Amendment said. The 13th Amendment says this: if any citizen of the United States shall accept, claim, receive, or retain any title of nobility or honor from any emperor, king, prince, or foreign power, such person shall cease to be a citizen of the United States and shall be incapable of holding any office of trust or profit under them. Now, I forget exactly what year the 13th Amendment came to be, and I think it was somewhere around, it was the beginning of 1800s, I think about 1815, somewhere in there. Excuse me. And the purpose of that was because of bar lawyers, bar attorneys that came from England and were here in the beginning of our nation, in our United States. And our founding fathers, because this is very early on, very beginning of our nation, there was a problem with the bar. The bar was bringing in civil court, civil law. I'm hearing some feedback here. Who am I coming through? Okay, thanks. You know, they brought civil law. England has had already been captured under civil law. They had already lost their common law. I mean, common law was still there to some degree, and I suppose to some degree I've seen some videos that even in Britain or England, there still is some common law or the fear of the fact that it's the true law. And my research and my studies have led me to a place where I've come to understand the difference of laws. There's like about 50 different jurisdictions. If you go through Black's Law Dictionary, and some of them are really just outright destructive. But nevertheless, there are 50 some odd jurisdictions. But there's only three types of law. There's the law, which even if you look into Black's Law, they're very clear on what law is. Law is really something that we come under God. That's true law. God's law is true law. And if you go back into history, you will discover that's law. A secondary type law, which covers a whole gambit of things, is civil law. And civil law ultimately has its beginnings in Babylon. It became Roman law, and then Justinian, and it's all the same thing, just different names to cover it with. And then eventually Roman Catholic law. And Rome, you know, they controlled the Western world for about 1,200 years under that law. And today we have, lawyers will tell you that we have Roman civil law. That's the law they will tell you we are under. And of course, that's a fraud. And people have come to believe that. They've come to believe that they can be judged by a judge. Common law does not permit us to be judged by a judge. Common law requires a jury, ultimately. It's called the tribunal, and it's 12 individuals who come from within the people, from among the people. And that is the process by which we, the people, are to be judged. So all law that falls under civil law is really unnatural law. Now, there is another law that has authority, and that law comes from the Constitution, and traces back from the Constitution to the people, and then, of course, from the people to God. God gave us the authority, made us to be sovereign above our country, above our government, and so we have a law that we've written, which is the Constitution, which makes us a republic. We're a constitutional republic. We're a people of law. We live under the law. We go into our Declaration of Independence, and we discover we have government by consent of the people. Okay, the people are to have control of their government, and they have that control through a constitution. We also control that government through two processes. One's political, and the other is judicial. And with those two different things, we control our nation. Of course, we've lost control of that quite some time ago. We don't control the political process, and we do not control the courts. They're totally controlled by others. I'm wondering, maybe, I guess we're not all, I guess we got the regular mute on. Let me put us into Q&A. If anybody wants to get into the queue, star six to get into the queue. Okay, so anyway, law is really our heritage, which is called natural law or common law. But again, this other law called positive law is called equity. And that is law that comes about properly from under a constitution by the people. It was ordained and established by the people on how our government should run. And we have a very, very good constitution. Now, there are other nations that may have a constitution. They may call themselves a republic, but none is a republic as us, where we're supposed to be under law and equity. So in 1865, the 13th Amendment just disappeared. And again, the lawyers were coming in and bringing this into our government. And that's why our founding fathers put forth the 13th Amendment. Anybody who, and again, lawyers were called esquires. It was a position of honor or nobility. Now, today, the lawyers, which is ABA, American Bar Association, those people under that bar, which was established in 1878, ultimately it's the teachings from that bar which has destroyed our nation. So let me just step back a little bit. In 1868, we had the 14th Amendment, which turns our unalienable rights into civil rights. In 1871, we have the Organic Act of 1871, which created a foreign state within a city. No different than that of London, which is a small city-state onto its own. So is Washington, D.C. The Vatican, those are three particular places off the top of my head, that are nations within a nation or a state within a state, totally separate. Ultimately, our nation has been seized. The seat of government has been seized by enemies, both foreign and domestic, and that's why we've had all these problems. Of course, we have Trump in there, and he's taken down the deep state, and the whole plan, of course, is to return control of the seat of government back to the people. But we need to not only take back the control there, we also need to take control of our courts. People need to really come to appreciate this and understand this. And at first it may be hard to realize because we don't have any framework to put this anywhere. But again, our courts are to be run by the people, not by the government. If the government runs the courts, which they do, their judge, the jury, and prosecutor, all three, because they have total control over the juries, their civil juries, their statutory juries, they operate according to their will, And, of course, you got the prosecutor who works for the state, and then the judge, of course, is going to maintain the status quo. And this is what we're up against. If we don't take back our courts, we'll never have America back, and America will never really truly ever be great again. So, as I mentioned earlier, in 1878, the ABA was established by 75 lawyers. In 1913, we have the 16th Amendment. And the 16th Amendment, of course, created a slave tax. We have debtors' prisons, ultimately, is what they have created. The Federal Reserve was also created in 1913, and the 17th Amendment came into effect in 1913. And in both cases, the 16th Amendment and the 17th Amendment was never ratified, and we do have that proof. We've included that in our court case, and that's available to go up and see. We put together a memorandum and brought together all of the facts and the sources, the documents that clearly prove that these two amendments were never ratified. Matter of fact, they were never even voted in properly to begin with. They didn't even have the votes to bring it. And then, of course, ratification, they didn't do that, couldn't do that either. It was in 1934 when the Rules Enabling Act came to be. And I've been really looking and struggling to find out where it is that they claim to have taken control of our law. And has fused together. They claim to have fused together under one title referred to as civil law and of course, criminal law. But it's all been brought together under civil. And if you look into the rules, it was the only place I can find where it appears to say what they claim it says. And it's the United States Supreme Court, the federal judiciary, right up on their website, they have this information that ultimately that common law was abrogated, or they really don't use the word abrogated. I know lawyers do, and I've heard a lot of people use that. But what they say is that they brought it together under what's called civil actions. And that's in Rule 2. Let me see, I have a note on that, see if I can find that. Yeah, it is. It's the Rules Enabling Act, Rule 2, and it obscurely states this. There is one form of action, the civil action, period. That's all it says. And with that one rule, they claim that they have really abrogated common law, taken natural law and combined it with their civil law, and of course that's a contradiction in itself, because civil law is statutory and common law is natural. It doesn't have statutes. And so this whole process that they have done under the rules, they've changed the law by rule. And Congress enabled this ability to happen and didn't say anything. And the United States Supreme Court in 1934, actually, I don't think they actually came up. The Rules Enabling Act was in 1934, and I think it was 1938 when the rules came to be. That's the way I understand it. And so it was 1938 when our entire court system changed. Everything changed. There was no more natural law courts. And they may have done this. Of course, I wasn't around back in 1938. They may have taken some time to do this, so it could have taken some years, or they could have been doing it over a little at a time, progressively leading up to those years. But whatever the case may be, at this point in time, and as far back as my memory serves me, we don't have any common law courts or natural law courts. We have opened, I believe, and maybe someplace here or there, somehow a common law court was opened up. Here in the United States. But again, I'm not aware of it. I don't know if anybody else is. But we did open a common law court. to the best of our ability. We have the power and the authority. We, the people, ordained and established the law for them, for our government. We also have the authority to change our form of government at any time we decide that it's no longer, is proper. It becomes destructive. So this Rules Enabling Act is really what has destroyed our nation. And it goes on. There's so many other things. There was the Bretton Woods Agreement, which surrendered us to centralized banking system. And the CIA and the NSA came into being. The police state came from through that. We have John Kerry, who signed back in 2013. He signed the United Nations Arms Treaty, which is a treaty and an agreement to get rid of weapons, get rid of all guns in the United States. People were no longer to have them. Of course, they've never been able to push that through. They continue to push. Every time there's any kind of a political debate anywhere, it always ends up with trying to get rid of guns, trying to get rid of our Second Amendment. They've destroyed our First Amendment, one of the most important parts of, well, the First Amendment in itself, of course, all of it is important, but the idea of us being able to, let me see if I can find my Constitution here, and I just want to read this. Let me read the First Amendment here. And that's where we have the right to redress grievances, but I want to read that. And if we can't go to our government for a redress of grievances, we're not free. We're not free at all. And again, you take any of our unalienable rights and bring them up in a courtroom, and you're going to be shut down real quick. I've been experiencing that for now 12 years or so, however long I've been working in the courts. This is what I've seen constantly. They just don't want to hear it. Okay. First Amendment, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, forbidding the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people to peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for redress of grievances. They have stolen, again, all of our unalienable rights. They have totally destroyed our Constitution. In the Declaration of Independence, we read, whenever any form of government becomes destructive to our rights, it is the right of the people to alter government and institute new servants. So we have already, put forth in the Declaration of Independence the process by which we can take our country back. We can fire our new servants. The question is, how do we do that? Congress is not willing to get rid of these judges that are in bad behavior. And Congress, again, they're totally acting outside of the Constitution also. So there's really only one way we can do it. And there's two ways we can do it. But we have to control the political process to do it politically by the process called recall, to take these people out of power. And the other side is to indict on the judicial side. And we're looking to work both sides. This fall, coming up in the next maybe month or two, we're going to start talking about the committeeman process in order to take back our political process and teach people to take that control. But we've been really focusing in the past years on taking back control of the courts, because we cannot never take back the political process without first taking back the courts, because we've already tried that in New York. We had some elected committeemen. We had a conference. We pulled all of the elected committeemen in both the Republican and the Democrat parties, rewrote the rules, and tried to take power and authority, because we were the elected committeemen in New York, and we were just ignored and rejected and denied. We took it to court, and we couldn't get anywhere because court, first of all, they didn't comprehend, I don't think, even what we were trying to talk about. But beyond that, they definitely were not going to take away the control out of the status quo. James Madison said that the people have an indubitable, unalienable, and indefeasible right to reform or change their government whenever it be found adverse or inadequate to the purpose of its institution. Jefferson wrote, when injustice becomes law, resistance becomes duty. Injustice indeed has become law. Anybody who goes into the courts have discovered that. Ben Franklin, he had mentioned, he said, those who give up liberty for security deserve neither. And we have given up many liberties. And right now they're trying to make, of course, and they've been trying to make this argument for a long time, and they're making it most recently again. And that is that we have to get rid of the guns because people are, killing people with guns. Of course, it's the criminal that's doing that. And you take the guns away from the people who have them, with permits or whatever. Those people are not causing the problem, but it's the people who are getting their guns illegally. But it's time to take our nation back. We got to take back our republic, and that requires a critical mass. I just want to go through a list of things that we've done over the past 16 or 17 years. In 2002, this was done by Robert Schultz with an organization called We the People. He brought a truth in taxation hearing, and it was broadcasted over C-SPAN, and it came together out there in Washington, D.C., and they concluded that our courts of law are closed. That was the conclusion. And that's been my conclusion also, and many, many other people who are looking into these things. In 2004, we had a conference to restore constitutional order. That, too, was broadcast over C-SPAN. All three branches of government on the federal level was invited. They said they'd come. None did. In 2008, United States Supreme Court denied answering the question brought before them by We the People, Robert Schultz, denied answering the question concerning the right for redress of grievances. So in 2009, we elected delegates for the Third Continental Congress from 48 states, and they met in St. Charles, Illinois, and they produced the Articles of Freedom. In 2010, the spring of 2010, the delegates served the Articles of Freedom to all 50 states, governors, and legislators, both houses in every state, and the United States government also. We served it on the president. We served it on both houses of Congress, and we served it on the courts. But again, ignored. Every time, ignored. In 2015, well, actually, we formed a common law grand jury. I guess we did form it about 2015. We started working on teaching and talking about the common law grand jury in 2013, I think it was. But by 2015, at that point, we had organized across the nation, every state of the union. We visited all the counties. Some of the counties we may have visited two or three at the same time. But for the sole purpose of bringing back the common law grand jury. And this was a process that we went through in order to get people involved and bring the membership that we have here in National Liberty Alliance, which is about, I think it's about 7,600 people at this point, well, a little over 7,700. We started in 2015. We actually became unified across the entire nation. We established unified grand juries in every single state, and then those grand juries came together to establish the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, whose purpose is solely to deal with the problem of subversion by enemies, both foreign and domestic, in our federal courts and in our federal government. So we formed the common law grand jury. We served a writ quo warranto on the U.S. government, and we served many writs mandamuses. In 2016, the common law grand jury filed an extraordinary action, and we have filed over 100 documents in that action. And every single document we filed, including the writ quo warranto, all the writ mandamuses, plus the 100-plus documents in the federal court, that we opened a case for the sole purpose of trying to open a common law court on the one hand, but also a place for a depository, a place where we can put our papers and be under the auspices of the court. We have, by God's mercy, have had the ability to maintain that court, as far as the filing of that court, still open. The judge was appointed to our case, and we set him straight that this is a common law court, that he can't be making any decisions. We did that up very, very beginning of our filings. But he has shut us down three times. Just recently he tried to shut us down a third time. But we came back with an indictment. First of all, the first time we came back with papers telling me to deny the power of the authority. The second time we came back with the same thing, but we indicted him. We told the clerks or any of the people, any of the court officers that would try to shut the case down or remove papers and not permit any more access, to filing of papers, that we would indict them. This happened again just recently, I think it's maybe about 20 days ago. We received another order from this judge to shut down this case, and he was going to do it within 30 days. 30 days isn't up yet. But since then, we have filed three papers. And if you haven't read these papers, it's extremely important to read these papers, because it really will bring people to an understanding of the problem, where we're at. It's a huge education. On August 17th this year, 2019, we filed a decision and order and a declaration to restore the law. We also filed a form. We took the civil court form and we changed it into a common law court form. A few different things on it that the civil law doesn't have, but we tried to use the same format. We opened up a common law court more clearly. But we actually have been in court, I think we can say we go all the way back to 2015 when we started filing the writ quo warrantos and writ mandamuses, but definitely in 2016 when we actually opened up a court to file things in. We had to pay the $400. We did it under protest. We tried to go in without paying it, but they just wouldn't take the papers at all. So we paid, and we paid the $400 under protest, and we've been filing our papers ever since. So they have been remaining silent all the way through. Every paper we filed, they never answered anything. So they have acquiesced. They've proven their guilt by their silence. They've proven that they're frauds by their silence. So now it's decision time. That's where we're at right now, and that's what people really need to come to an understanding of. We are in the courts right now making decisions and ordering our servant government to obey the law. It's that simple. And if you read through these papers, it becomes quite clear. Again, we filed the paper on August 17, 50 pages, a decision and order, and a declaration to restore the law of the land. On September 3rd, we filed another decision and order concerning the merging of equity and law. And I think we read that paper, last week. On September 9th, we filed a paper against Judge Kahn, a second indictment. And again, we're not going to read that particular document, but I think next week we're going to read the next document, which was filed today, went out into the mail today, be filed in the federal district, the Northern District here, the Federal Court of New York. We filed a paper, and it's titled Fake Law and Fake Courts. So the paper on September 3rd focused in on how they merged equity with law, and on September 16th, which is today, we made it clear on how they did, how our courts indeed are fake. They're not courts of law. Our law is fake. Our courts are fake. And the people don't even realize it. That's why we need to become educated. We need to come to an understanding of these things. You know, Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. He went on to say, an enlightened citizenry is indispensable for the proper functioning of a republic. So if people are not going to become educated, we cannot have a republic. We have to be enlightened citizens or people, and that is what's required for a proper functioning of a republic. Self-government is not possible, he said, unless the citizens are educated sufficiently to enable them to exercise the oversight. It is therefore imperative that the nation see to it that a suitable education be provided for all its citizens. Educate and inform the whole mass of the people. They're the only sure reliance for the preservation of our liberty. Now, the nation, our government, should have been giving us a proper education. You know, they have given us a public education, but inside that public education, they have not given us a proper education. As a matter of fact, the whole process of education today is to teach socialism. And that's why socialism is so much on the rise in our nation. I mean, I'm appalled and drawn back to see how many people support the Democratic movement, the Democrats' movement towards a socialist state. You know, I think in another, if we don't do anything, we don't become educated, I think in another, I think quite quickly, another generation maybe at most, or two, you know, it's the older generation at this point that is really holding it and teaching it to some degree, but even in that, we fail to really understand what our heritage is. We fail to really understand what law is and what our courts should be and how our government should operate. Politics was never meant to be part of our political process. And again, George Washington speaks about this in his farewell address. And we have a copy of that, and we did include some of that in our paperwork, I believe, on the one we filed on August 17th, the decision and order, declaration to restore. I think we had quite a bit of what he had to say concerning politics. If we can get rid of politics, we can get rid of corruption. But we can't get rid of politics, or we can't get rid of corruption until we have just courts. Just courts is the key to getting our nation back, to bring our nations, our courts, back under natural law and require obedience to the Constitution by those people who we have elected or appointed or maybe even employed. Without a just court, we have no control over that. And we also have no control over our political process because, again, the enemy has seized control. It's going to require a court order for them to cease and desist and allow the properly elected committeemen to take back control, whether then they can require that the people who become elected have an understanding of the Constitution and that they obey it. And when they don't obey it, then either we recall them politically or we indict them judicially. We, the people, should have that power and authority. Without that power and authority, we have no government by consent, nor can we ever have government by consent without people controlling the courts and the political process. And when I say controlling the court, I'm talking about the court of law. Where the only individual that is to be that works for the government, other than of course you know the deputy that is in the court, we have is the magistrate, and a magistrate is an individual who's only there to sign the papers that gets administrated. He's the administrator of the court. And he signs the papers to represent the will of the tribunal. And the tribunal is the 12 people. It is the jury. Untainted, uncontrolled. No judge is to speak to the jury concerning the judge's will or the government's will in any way to require law as far as statutes be concerned to be applied in that court. It is a natural law court. And so the people must control that court. Now, the equity courts, again, we've given that power to the Congress to write law to be controlled by the judicial system where judges will make decisions. But that's on decisions concerning their operation, you know, whatever whatever political agency is in view, even the armed forces or the law of the sea, okay? That is where they have their proper authority, but not upon the land, not upon the people. The people are judged only by law. And this is what makes America great. This is what makes us different from any place else, is the fact that the government should not be able to haul us into court and throw us into prison and have their will done in courts to maintain the status quo, to hold up the authority of some government over the people. Right, and we have, corporatism. Corporations control our nation through all that funny money that they give out to all of our elected representatives. And so they're paying them off in order to do the will of the corporation. That's called a bribe. These people should be in jail. We should not permit this. And we can change this whole process. But we can only do that if we take control of the courts. That's how important this thing is that we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance. That's how important the work of the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury is. And everybody needs to get educated in this and get behind this. let me see here. So anyway, we need to take this back. We were looking a little bit on sort of the history of bringing us to the point where we filed all these papers. And we've also indicted judges. We've indicted 21 federal judges and 43 lower state judges, you know, state and lower court judges. We filed 26 habeas corpuses, 56 papers concerning nonjudicial foreclosures, and we're filing more right now. We go to our Bibles and we read in Hosea chapter 4, verse 6, it says, "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because thou hast rejected knowledge, I will also reject thee, that thou shalt be no priest to me, seeing that thou hast forgotten the law of thy God. I will also forget thy children." And I believe that's where we sit right now. You know, when the Bible speaks of these things of being destroyed for a lack of knowledge, it's not only just being destroyed of lack of spiritual knowledge, knowledge of the Bible, knowledge of our relationship that we should be having with God, but it goes beyond that also into our political lives, into our daily life. And remember, the Declaration of Independence, that is a covenant with God. That is the foundation of our law. Upon that foundation is the framework of the Constitution, and the capstone is the Bill of Rights. But God also told us in 2 Chronicles chapter 7, verse 14, he gave us an out. "If my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sins and will heal their land." And that is returning back to the law, returning back to the covenant. By doing that, we get the blessings of liberty from God. We receive the blessings for being obedient to his law. And our government is brought under control all by that process. So here at NLA, you know, we are going to provide that suitable education. I don't think government can be trusted with a suitable education. The people have to do this. And it's done in a curriculum. And to some degree, you know, of course, government-controlled schools, you know, the public education, they will permit certain curriculums to go into the schools and other curriculums that they'll reject. And, of course, it's up to the people to decide what curriculums they want in their schools. But nevertheless, the curriculums are written by people, generally speaking. I suppose government has written some curriculums also, but I'm just not aware of that. But there are textbooks out there for teaching children. We need to write our own textbooks. As a matter of fact, that's one of the things that National Liberty Alliance is working on, is a textbook in school for civics and for the Constitution, constitutional studies. And they should be learning that with history, American history, throughout their education, so that when they finally get through school, that they are prepared to be able to, you know, have government by consent, to be a morally minded people. You know, we as a nation will be as moral as our courts in our relationship with other nations and within our relationship among ourselves. We will be as just and as morally minded as our courts are. And right now, our courts are a mess. And, you know, as I mentioned a little earlier, we have lost our way. We have lost our morality. We've lost the blessings of God, and we need to turn back. And that starts with an education, a proper education, which, again, we give here at National Liberty Alliance in two courses, a civics course and a course for government by consent. We need to learn our heritage. Sovereign immunity we have from all legislative law. And again, let me make this point even clearer. What makes our nation so great is the fact that the way everything was set up is that it's not possible, if it was running properly, and it's not, of course, because they've abrogated common law. They've concealed and shut down our courts of law, and so on. But the way it is to be is that we should not be able to be thrown in prison by the whim of government for this reason or that reason. They totally control that process. They control on whether we're going to be indicted. They're going to get their ham sandwich, so to speak, which is an insult. It shouldn't even be funny. It's an insult. But again, you know, is being thrown into a dungeon without due process, which is where we're at. We don't have due process. We don't have our unalienable rights that we can rest upon, supported by the Constitution, to be brought up into a court to force that court to do the right thing, the just thing, and also prevent them from judging over us. The servant cannot judge over the master, but that's where we're at. And people don't realize it's upside down. They just don't see it. They need to be woken up. So the solution is to have government by consent, and that's what we're teaching. We also, we're joining cases to our case. Now, we've been, you know, doing casework for people, you know, writing papers to the lower courts, particularly on a state level, a lot of county courts, and mostly, I think, town courts. Concerning, it depends on what state you're in, but they do it at different levels. So any one of those, a state court, county court, or town courts is where they do these non-judicial foreclosures. And it's exactly what they are. They're saying it's non-judicial foreclosure. They bring it into court to make it look like it's some kind of a lawful thing. The hearings don't really take place unless people are trying to fight back against them. And they just drag it on and drag it on and drag it on. But in the process of them dragging these things on in court, they're also in process behind the scenes, setting the stage to be able to take control of your property. And that could take a couple of years, that process, and it usually does, unless the people just fall away and disappear immediately when they receive the foreclosure and told to leave. Without even a court lawyer, without even a court order, some lawyer will write a letter on behalf of the mortgage company telling you to leave the house. You got 30 days or whatever. You must leave. And people obey that as if that's a court order, and they give up their house. And in those cases, they can move the house, change the ownership and everything in maybe a year or two. But if there's people fighting to try to keep their home, it usually could go 4 or 5 years and even more. But at the end, they will take that home unless we do something about it. So we've been doing papers for those people and who have come to us and asked us. And all of that is evidence in our case. It all has become part of evidence. And so it's all filed in the courts. And we're asking for those who have done that, if they want to do a joinder so that their case is used with, you know, more than evidence, but also will open their case up in the federal court and go after these lower courts for running court systems in jurisdictions unknown and not receiving due process. And for that reason, we can shut down everything that they have done. We can require that they bring that person back to the state of being that they were in prior to the, you know, being pulled into that court for a non-judicial foreclosure. Now, it's going to be an uphill battle. We also have those habeas corpuses. We're doing the same thing. So, again, anybody who's got a habeas corpus that we have done for them over the years, or anybody that has a non-judicial foreclosure that we wrote papers and filed in the courts on their behalf for them, if they want to join the case, then they have to, you know, get a hold of Jim. You can get a hold of Jim through intake at nationallibertyalliance.org and work out just it's a joinder form, giving us permission to move your case over. So once we do the joinder form, which I'll go through that process right now, it's very simple. We first do the petition for the joinder, and then we just do a move for cause, which we serve on to all the individuals, the court, the judge, and all the lawyers in that other court. Has been moved for cause, and it's also a show cause at the same time. And we give them 30 days to answer, and they can't answer properly because they've been operating in jurisdictions unknown. They have not been given the people due process. Everything was unlawful. So after 30 days, if they don't repair the individual on their own, and they can't answer, like I said, then we do a decision in order. And in that decision and order, you know, we demand that that court cease and desist, that the people are restored back to their original state they were in when this whole thing started. If they spent $5,000 on a lawyer or $500 from a lawyer, they need to recoup that. So any losses that they have, the house, if the house was taken away, the house must be brought back, given back, or at least true value of that house. Also, we added in this thing damages $1,000 in face valued silver, so real money, $1,000 in real money. Right now, $1,000 in silver, real money, is about $18,000. It's about $18 an ounce right now, maybe $16, $17, somewhere around there, maybe $18 an ounce. And that's, of course, is going to go up. But we're going to stick with silver because there is no inflation in silver. Of course, the dollar, the silver will become much more powerful as the dollar becomes more weaker. And again, the plan I know that Trump is putting together is to bring us back under the gold and silver. Maybe we'll have a silver certificate. That's a possibility. I don't really like that idea. I think we should just go back silver and gold, copper, nickel, that's it. But maybe a silver dollar, a silver certificate if the banks are give accountability constantly and we watch them like a hawk, then it could work. Now, so anyway, that's the whole process. It's very simple. Now, anybody who wants to join their case, and they haven't, we haven't done anything for them in the past, we've got quite a few people coming through the process right now, or they have to do a petition for joinder, Then we do what's called an amicus curiae, where we challenge the jurisdiction and talk to the courts about the fact that they not only don't have jurisdiction, but they're not capable, nor are they given due process, which is required under the law. And they have 30 days to answer that. And if they fail to answer, then we move the case into the federal court for cause. And then after 30 days, we make a decision in order. So the only extra process with the people who are coming in new is that amicus curiae, where before all the other people, we've already done that on their behalf. We didn't call it an amicus curiae, but we did write papers on behalf of the people. For instance, in non-judicial foreclosures, we notified the judges that there was a crime taking place and that they were becoming part of that crime. But they ignored that. So again, they don't have a leg to stand on, and we can move this process through. Now, what people need to understand, though, is this isn't going to go easy. It's going to be an uphill battle. It's going to take some time. I don't think it's going to take a long time, because really the whole thing really rests on when the deep state is totally taken down. And that's a matter of people being arrested, which I think is coming up, you know, with Bill Barr. He's about ready to release a lot of different things, and they're going to be releasing the information first and the evidence first so the people can sort of chew on that, and then the arrests will come out. Maybe there'll be a few arrests up front right away, but a lot of the arrests will take place after the people have time to look and see the evidence and start to, you know, get in debates and talking about these things that's been taking place behind the scenes with our government through the deep state. So in that process, when that's going down, that's the perfect opportunity for us to be in the courts. And so we're positioned ourselves right now. We are in the courts. We're in the perfect place as long as we continue to file papers. Now, even if they do eventually shut down and stop taking papers up in New York, and remember, they shut us down 2 years ago, so they claim, and they've tried to shut us down three times. So they know they really haven't really shut us down, because they're still taking papers. And they're still taking papers because of fear, because they know, number one, we are the people. We are the grand jury or the trial jury. We do have the unalienable right to a court of law and to be under natural law. You know, they know that, and they fear that. And they don't want to, particularly the clerks, because remember, a judge is not going to go down and pull a paper out of a file. That's just never done. He'll order the clerk to pull the paper out of the file, so the clerk breaks the law. And we've informed them of that problem and that process. Go let the judge break the law. Don't you break the law, become part of a conspiracy with him. So that, I think, is what has kept our papers continuing to go forward, to be staying in the court, and for them to continue to take them. Now, it is true that when people call up, you get a judge in another court, maybe where we filed a paper, and the judge will call up that other judge who's, you know, for the court case here on the federal level, and that judge might inform them, or the clerk might inform them, oh, that case has been closed. So they believe the case has been closed, but nevertheless, paperwork is still flowing. We've been filing for over 2 years now, and we continue to file. And like I said, we just filed four papers. August 17th, September 3rd, September 9th, September 16th. Now, the September 16th paper, by the way, which is on fake law and fake courts, we'll be reading that next week. But it is available for anyone who wants to read it now. You can go up onto nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight the grand jury, come down just one step down and click on action against the judiciary, and they're towards the top of the page. You know, it's a few inches down, but it's towards the top of the page. And underneath that, we have all of our memorandums. I think we filed about 23 or 24 memorandums with this paper. We also have a list of all the indictments. We have the denial of habeas corpus and felony rescue by these judges. We have denial of due process and felony rescue, also for the habeas corpuses. We did also filed an indictment on a whole list of people with the Lavoie Finucane murder. And that was a 24-page murder conspiracy indictment. And we have some big names in that. That also has been filed. And we filed against Judge Kahn, who is the judge who tried to close our case down, again, now the third or fourth time right now, and we indicted him again. But nevertheless, we indicted him, and we filed that into also the common law case. And we filed all of the papers that we had filed previously. You know, again, it's like about 100 different documents that we filed on the statutory level, which again was sort of a depository, a place for us, the people, to be under the auspices of the court. And we got quite a bit of evidence there, and then we have all of the different memorandums and different papers that we filed prior to the opening of the first court back in 2016, but papers been filing really, or being served really, back to 2015. Let me see here. So anyway, this petition for joinder, anybody that wants to join their case, they need to, you know, they need to get a hold of Jim and just go through the paperwork. But again, remember, you know, we're not going to have instant success. This is going to take some time. And the whole plan really is the fact that all of this paper is really, you know, weight upon them. It's one filing after another, after another, after another. And they don't do nothing. They don't say anything. And that speaks reams to us. That tells us a lot. And first of all, it tells us that that they know what we're doing is true and right. And it also tells us that they are nervous. They're afraid. So we need to take advantage of that. We need to continue to file papers. We're going to try to file one paper every week and for as long as we can. I mean, maybe we may have to skip a week, or maybe it may take 10 days maybe to file another paper. We need to file papers. But at least at the same time, we need to be filing joinders, because joinders is evidence. It also gives us the opportunity to make rulings. And all of that is important. And again, it all is mounting evidence against these people. It puts pressure on them. It reveals their fraud, their sin against the people. And it's that critical, it's that mass, you know, it's that weight and critical mass that we're going to need in order to get us over the top. At some point, the dam has got to break. So people need to understand that this is the only way we could do it. I don't know of any other group doing what we're doing. We're the only ones that I'm aware of. And we're doing it lawfully, according to history, according, if we want to use the word precedent in many different things we do, lawfully. And so we need to continue to put that pressure on and keep that pressure on going. Now, I just want to talk a little bit about law before we open up for questions. I don't know if there's any, Jan, I don't know if we got any questions there, but if we do, we'll pick them up in a few minutes. But common law eludes definition, okay? It's not statutes. Common law is not statutes. It's not built upon precedent, okay? Whereas their civil law, they go upon precedent. If something's been holding for a period of time, it's precedent. Hey, it's the law. Well, that doesn't work that way in common law, you know? If a mistake is made, it needs to be corrected, no matter how long that mistake has been used. But we don't work with precedent. And again, you know, they use trial court decisions, and they call that common law. That's how far off base their understanding is. That's what lawyers believe common law is. Common law is not a collection of trial court rulings. Now, common law, also known, of course, as natural law, it's synonymous. And I'm trying to use natural law more than I am common law, just to make that difference, or a separation of the words between what they think common law is and what we're talking about, natural law. But we do have to use that phrase, because that phrase is used as natural law, is used more than common law and Black's law and in the courts and so on of the past. Common law has been the phrase used. But nevertheless, it's natural law. And that is written in the hearts and mind of the people. It's naturally common unto all men. We can go to Hebrews chapter 10, verse 16, and Romans chapter 2, 14 through 15, where God says he wrote his laws into our hearts. Man knows right from wrong. We're not animals. We know right from wrong. We may sear our conscience. Nevertheless, even the serial killer knows they're doing wrong. So it's written in the hearts. This is not rocket science. Common law is built upon self-evident truths called maxims. And that's what drives, those are the rules. Maxims are the rules of common law. If you want to know where the rules of common law is, it's maxims. I've seen books written on rules of common law, and first of all, they bore me to tears and put me to sleep, and certainly not built upon maxims. Anything I saw seems to really get back to the philosophy of men. No, we're resting on truths, okay? Self-evident truth. The Declaration of Independence, okay, is written as self-evident truth. You cannot argue or deny the principles, the maxims in the Declaration of Independence. You also cannot deny the truth, the apparent truth of our Bill of Rights and our Constitution, which we have an unalienable right to write and ordain and establish. So these are truths, self-evident truth. Court cases are built upon self-evident truth. Again, laws written in the hearts, and again, the rules that drive the case ultimately is maxims. Common law court is built primarily on two major maxims. One is, for every injury, there must be a remedy. And the second one is, for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party. And without an injured party, a court case cannot proceed, at least not one. Well, there has to be an injured party, even if it's a contract disagreement or some kind of an unlawful injury on another person. You still have to have an injured party. There has to be an affidavit, a complaint, a sworn-to complaint, an affidavit. So maxims are brief, self-evident truths that control our law courts. It provided the discernment in the writing of our founding documents. It is the advisor of our legislatures. And every consideration of mankind seeks what is fair and best via maxims. Obvious truths. Now, any court and public leader that does not honor or consider maxims are not just. Self-evident truth is what is just. Our courts were established to enforce common law principles. The word justice is synonymous with virtue, and virtue is a biblical principle that derives from Jesus Christ alone. Maxims are the law that never changes. You know, laws of men will always change, but maxims will never change. They'll always remain the same. It's just truth, self-evident truth. No right-thinking person can disagree with a maxim. Every court is bound by the common law rules of maxims. Maxims test those who judge. Maxims put an absolute limit on those who rule. Now, the other law we spoke a little bit about is positive law. Positive law is legislative law adopted by proper authority. If the authority is not proper, then it's not positive law. And positive law is equity, okay? It's what controls the government. But that equity, okay, in order for a government to be able to write that, legislators to write codes or statutes under equity, they have to have proper authority. And again, the authority, there is an authority that starts from God, who gave we the people the unalienable right to rule ourselves and to live under his just laws and to be judged by his just laws. And we have the unalienable right to have government by consent, so we wrote a constitution, which makes us a republic. And that constitution is what the government must live under and obey. And then they write the laws, which would be equity, which is through proper authority. Civil law is not. Civil law is the whim of men. Civil law is created to control men, to enslave men. We live in statutory prisons, whether in villages, towns, cities, states, or the federal government. Wherever we're at, we are in statutory prisons. And that is civil law, control of the people. And you have civil rights. Everybody's heard that term, civil rights. I don't have civil rights. I have unalienable rights. We are not a democracy. We are a republic. We are ruled by law, not men. But clearly we are being ruled by men because we have lost our way, as I mentioned. We have a fake heritage, fake history, fake roots, fake foundation, a fake democracy, a fake constitution, fake money, fake courts, fake laws, fake news. It's all fake. It's not real. It's fiction. Why do we want to continue under that? We need to get out from underneath it. We can only do that by becoming informed, by becoming educated, to come to an understanding. Okay, so positive law is defined in Black's, it's defined very clearly. It's legislated law, which is equity, adopted by proper authority, not the whim of men, not the desire of some tyrant to control men, because those are the people that write the civil law, which includes criminal. The civil law places the accuser under the will of an earthly king who believes he has divine right to rule over the people, usually ruthlessly, presided over by a priest or a judge who will execute the will of the king over his subjects without mercy. And that's the other thing about law. Law has mercy. Equity does not have mercy. Although if it's a criminal, if it's an accusation of a criminal act in a court that is controlled by equity, in other words, a contract between maybe commercial activity with the states and the government, or maybe somebody who is in a particular agency and breaks the rules and breaks the law and abuses the law, their jurisdiction, and they're brought up on charges. Equity does have somewhat of a control on that case. It has, as a matter of fact, 100% control on that case, as long as the jury agrees with it. The jury might find a particular statute that is properly applied, but they may feel it's unjust. They may feel it's too strong. They may feel it's not strong enough. They may feel, hey, it's a good statute. It should work. It works in many places, but not in this case. And that's called jury nullification. And people need to know these things. The juries need to be fully informed jurists, and that needs to be our job. That brings us to some of the other things we're doing, which we'll touch on in a minute, which brings us into the process of taking back this nation. But anyway, Babylonian courts, which are Roman courts, Roman civil courts, Roman Catholic Church courts, Roman civil law, civil actions, according, what we have, or what they claim that we have in our courts, all of that is Babylonian. Babylonian courts are inquisitional, inquisitorial. The judge prosecutor and the jury is all working for the government to enforce statutes upon the people, unrighteous statutes, unlawful statutes. Babylonian law, as I mentioned earlier, is Roman Empire's law, also the Code of Justinian, civil law, civil rights. Now, we have law, we have unalienable rights. Okay, so getting back to the plan of National Liberty Alliance, again, we do want to start training people to become committeemen, and everybody needs to really consider doing this. It only takes up 40 hours a year, roughly speaking, of your time. And most of that is around election time. The opportunity to come together in an evening with other elected committeemen to hear why people want to run for a particular office. And we get to decide whether they're worthy to run for that office, whether they know the Constitution or not. And if they don't, we shouldn't put them on the ballot, because that's what the committeemen do. They put people on the ballot, and they do recall for those who are not obedient. Of course, we're not exercising that because people have forgotten, and it has been taken away from us. We don't have a proper education. And again, that's what National Liberty Alliance is doing, offering that proper education. So we need to take control. People need to run for committeemen. It's a two-year commitment. And again, it's usually around the election time. You come together in the evenings for a couple hours here and a couple hours there in order to hear people out and question people and put them on the ballot or deny them access to the ballot. Tell them, hey, go learn the Constitution. Go to National Liberty Alliance. Take their course there and then come back and we'll ask you some questions. And again, once we believe that you have a good grip on the Constitution and you understand that is what is to guide you as a politician or as a statesman, then we'll put them on the ballot. But all these people coming into positions in government, they have no understanding of the Constitution at all. And we're talking about legislators. We're talking even about judges. They have no appreciation of the law at all. They may know it on the federal level, but they don't adhere to it. They don't obey it. They don't hold it up. They don't support it. Okay, so we need 4 to 5 people in each county to run for committeemen. That's about 15,000 people. Right now we have a membership of about 7,700 people. But we're about to hit that critical mass. That number should blow up soon. Okay, but it's all a matter of, that critical mass hitting us, and we will have those kind of numbers in order to train and teach people in their counties to take control. We need 4 people in every county to become administrators. Again, that's another 15,000 people. This for jury administrators. They get to orientate the grand jury and the trial jury to prepare them for the job that they're about to go and do, okay, to hear a case or to consider indictments. And we don't need any more than a few hours, 6-8 hours. That's plenty, to really give people the foundation of what it is that they're coming in to do. They're going to sit as a grand jury or they're going to sit as a trial jury. So we give them that foundation, understanding their power and authority that we, the people, ordained and established. It's constitution for them. You get to decide if you don't like the law that they wrote and used in this case, you can nullify it if it's a case where equity is involved in a criminal act that's on the land. Again, because agencies and commercial activities are governed by equity. We, the people, are governed by law. That's God's law. We're under his law. Righteous, justice law. Just law. Now, the jury administrators, that's a full-time job. It's a paid position. Right now, people are being paid to orientate the juries, to bring them together and be there for, advice or any questions they have, help them, assist them in the writing of their papers, and we have to make sure when we do it that we're very careful to make sure it's their will that's being put down on paper, that we don't tweak that or push that in a direction that they didn't intend. That would be a crime, by the way. Of course, that's what they do today. They do whatever they want. that's a paid position, so it's a job. So anybody who is interested in that job, when you sign up for the course, it's only a matter of going in there and checking the box to become an administrator. I believe, I'd have to check into this. We'll have to ask Carl on this. Jen, maybe you can check with Carl on this. I think we did look into this, that if people can go in and they can go to their, let's open. Hang on a second. Okay, they can go into their account, my account. It's right under the blue bar towards the right side, but it's right underneath the blue bar. You'll see tech support, my account, unsubscribe, add event, calendar, and log out. We'll go to my account. I believe if you get into my account, if you want to become an administrator for the juries, then you just go check the box in there and save it, and then you'll be registered as an administrator in the county that you live in. And, of course, we can change that if you wanted to work in the county next door. Maybe that court's closer. You know, that could be changed. Or maybe your county is full. You can roll over to the county next door. You don't have to live in that county to work in it. But anyway, that's available for people. Now, that box may not show up if you're not signed up for the course. Okay? When you go in and sign up for our course, you get to check the box, and that automatically puts your account that you want to become an administrator, and you list it on a list, the place where we know where we have people. I think, let me see, we have 1,091 people have signed up for grand jury administrators. And in my opinion, that's one of the most rewarding jobs anyone can do. Because it's real, it's active, it's applying truth and justice in our counties, which takes us right up into the federal level. You are the investigative body for the grand jury. We can come to the grand jury just as any prosecutor can, and bring cases before the grand jury. That's what an administrator could do. If people come to the administrators to seek to talk to the grand jury, we can do a preliminary investigation, try to solve the problem without even having to give it to the grand jury. We can try to help solve the problem. And if we can get an agreement between the parties, you know, the person who is being abused and the abuser, usually a government agent, of course, and if we can squash the problem and fix it, then we can do that. If we can't, then we can allow these people to come and bring their case, and whatever, you know, investigation we did, we can bring those facts up also before the grand jury and ask for an indictment. And if the grand jury has the option to try to fix the problem also. They don't have to indict. They can try to solve the problem. Why not? You know, we read the Magna Carta, which gives us a lot of insight on how a grand jury should be. That's one of the processes, is to fix the problem, okay? And if you can't fix the problem, if the grand jury can't fix the problem, then they can indict and send them in to the trial jury. And the trial jury will, at the end of the day, fix the problem, okay, deal with the problem. So they will decide guilt or innocence. They will decide what is law, if law is being applied, whether they like it or not, if it could be applied. So they get to decide all of it. They also get to decide the remedy, how to restore the individual, what the damages are. That's all the trial jury's job. So this is very important. If we don't take control of it, the government will, because they already have it. They don't intend on giving it up, so they're not going to give it up to us easily. You know, we got to fight for it. And this is how we're fighting for it, with our paperwork. You know, every time we file the truth upsets the darkness. It upsets the evil. It upsets the liar, because it reveals them for what they are. And one of the key things that I live my life by, especially what work we do here at National Liberty Alliance, is I trust that God's going to win this war for us. Because we certainly can't. We wrestle against, not against flesh and blood, but against powers in the high places, political powers, spiritual powers in high places. And so God has to do the winning here. You know, we just have to stand up for truth. We have to bring truth out and lay it up against the lie to show the difference between light and darkness here. And what happens to darkness when light comes into a room? It flees, it disappears, it goes away. Well, that's what righteousness and justice does to the dark heart. And we need to understand that, because that is our power. And that's what we're doing, is we're shining light in the dark places. Get rid of the roaches and the rats, the snakes, so on. Thomas Jefferson said, "We in America do not have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participates." We don't need millions of people to bring this government back to where it belongs. As a matter of fact, we only need about 30,000 people. So that's really not a lot of people, considering the population of the United States. But it's surely 30,000 people focusing in on justice, focusing in our courts, focusing in on the bringing the political process to back to where it belongs, to get rid of the politicking, all that funny money, the bribes, okay? That's what we need to be doing. And it only takes about 30,000 people to do that. And again, critical mass, I think, will give us a lot more than that. You know, each county, my county where I live in, we have 249 committeemen throughout the whole county. But my county is controlled by four individuals, four or five. Some counties are four, some are five. In my county, I think it's five. So the whole county, all these people, these 249 committeemen, are controlled by five individuals. Whatever those five individuals do or say, their will is done. If they want this one to be put onto the ballot, or that one to be put onto the ballot, they're going to be put onto the ballot. And it doesn't matter what the other committeemen think, do, or say. It's irrelevant to them. They don't care. They got the power. And it's unjust. We need to take it away from them. And all we need is four elected people. And I'll be honest with you. We actually only need, but it would be a much difficult job to do, we actually need a couple of people through the whole state, because anyone elected can do the appointing. Anyone elected can enforce the rules. Anyone elected can vote on new rules, change the rules, and put good, just rules in place, which we've already done here in Dutchess in New York State, all 62 counties. We just haven't been able to execute it and exercise it because they will not, accept the elected committeemen, because they're being controlled by, the minions that serve the New World Order, ultimately, whether they realize it or not. Samuel Adams said, "The natural liberty of man is to be free." Now let this sink in, let this soak in, is to be free from any superior power on earth. This is what made us America, free from any superior power on earth. No king can come and throw us in jail. No king can come and accuse us and control the courts and to put us into jail. No, they can't, only the people can do that. That's what the grand jury does and the trial jury does. But anyway, the natural liberty of man is to be free from any superior power on earth, and not to be under the will or legislative authority of men, but only to have the law of nature for his rule. That's common law, natural law, courts of justice. Okay, I think that's pretty much it. Let me just run down a couple of notes I have here. All right, that's pretty much it. So, look, what we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance is really bringing a proper education to the people so that the people at the grassroots level can take control of our nation from the grassroots level. We provide a place for people to organize and to communicate, and again, the most important, to be educated. So that's what we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance, teaching the people those things and in that process how to have government by consent. And people need to step up and take control of their nation, because if we don't, they already have it, they'll continue with it, and we'll just get more of the same. Okay, so I'll end it there. I really would like to stick on questions and any conversation really on this subject. If anybody wants to talk about a joinder, we can talk to them about that, you know, be more clearer, give them more information here tonight as we speak. But we definitely do not want to get into the details of anyone's case, at least not tonight. We don't want to talk about the details of the case. We want to talk about what it is that National Liberty Alliance is doing, what it is that we're doing that can empower you, we the people, what is it that we can do to educate you and give you the proper understanding of government. We have to understand the structure of government, the structure of our courts, how it works, in order that we can consent to it. For if we the people don't know the Constitution, how can we know whether they're breaking the law or not? We can't. And I can tell you, and I know a lot of people that have been educating themselves here, also can see quite clearly that they are breaking the law every step of the way, every turn our government is breaking the law. They're violating their oath. They are seizing control in jurisdictions that they have no power or authority in. They make laws and do things that they have no power or authority to do. And again, you can't know that unless you know the Constitution. You have to know that they are breaking the law. Okay. Jen, do we have any questions?
We have about 8 questions tonight, John.
Uh-oh. Well, we may not do them all, but we'll see.
Okay. The first question is, what about giving full notice to all the heads of the militias? How long has it been since we updated the leaders of the militias and asked new militias to join National Liberty Alliance?
Well, we have found, I think, maybe 8 or 10 militias across the United States. I'm sure there are others, but we haven't been able to find any more than that. We have served notification to them a long time ago. We haven't done it in a while. What is the militia going to do? We are the militia. Our connection or our contact with them would really be to educate them, to tell them, come get an education. But I don't know, going to the militia for any kind of enforcement is not proper, at least not at this point in time. Matter of fact, I don't think it's going to be proper at all with the way things are going in Washington now, because I think Trump has a grip on it. You know, he's doing what has to be done. And we need to take back our courts. That's what we need to be doing right now, taking back our courts and our political process as he's taken back Washington, D.C., and draining the swamp. So anyway, we have made contact with them. We never heard anything back from any of them. We were trying to educate them as much as we were trying to educate others. And there really is no place that we have found where you can kind of get a good solid list. But if we can get a good solid list, maybe send some kind of an invitation, a paper to them, and let them know what we're doing, and that they should have their people come here to get educated. Next question.
One of the problems we all have today is that if we know of someone that we think is a danger to himself or society, drugs, weapons, whatever, we do not have a level of contact other than police that must make an arrest. Can we provide that citizen-friendly contact reporting level?
I'm not sure I understand. Read that again. I'm not understanding.
Okay.
question
well,
clear
it's just,
enough.
One of the problems we have today is that if we know someone we think may be a danger to himself, okay, and if you call the cops, they're going to come out and make an arrest. So is there some way we can provide more of a citizen-friendly contact reporting level so that they aren't automatically arrested and whatever?
Yeah, well, that's very touchy. That's very hard. One person may see something as a problem where another person may not, as an illness or a danger, and another person may not, and they may or may not be. You know, look at, if we properly educate our children and ourselves, and we become a people with knowledge of who we are, of our heritage, of our lore and society, and what we that we need to give back also to, you know, society. If we can get to that point, then, you know, the family, you know, the structure of the family has to be secured. And that's all part of this. It gets back to morality. It gets back to the blessings of God. It gets back to strong family and so on. And families should be able to see a problem and correct the problem. But again, you know, we've been so demoralized. People, they've lost their way. I speak to myself first. I have to find my way, and I've been working on it, and everybody needs to be working on it. But I don't see any real solution there. It's kind of dangerous. I'm bleeding through someone. I think through you, Jan. So if you can mute yourself while I'm talking. Jan. You get that? Okay. So I don't know. That's kind of a dangerous road to go down. Of course, if you see something that you feel you really had to do something, then you got to do something. Police officers surely are not educated properly to be able to deal with problems. The family courts and any kind of a court that would try to deal with this problem is not capable of dealing with these problems. If we, the people, take back our courts, we surely can change that whole process and get rid of all these lawyers trying to, you know, control or teach a family because they do nothing but destroy the family. They're surely not going to assist or help the family because all they're about is statutes, destructive statutes at that. But if we can take back our courts and establish a better process, I got some ideas and. I'll be writing something on it at some point in time, and if anybody else wants to think about things and write some kind of a new plan to replace the family courts, we'll surely look at that, and we can, you know, have the meeting of the minds and try to hammer something out. But until then, I don't see a really good, just, righteous way to deal with it. Also, we need to get rid of all of these corporate police forces. Remember, all of these police forces ultimately are corporate cops. That's what they are. Towns are incorporated, and if you got a town cop, they're a corporate cop. The first order of business that they set up in a town or in a city or in a village, the first order of business is they want to try to set up a cash machine, a courthouse, a place where they can make money. And once they open up a courthouse, well, then they have to have a police force out there to give away all these code violations so they can pull them into court and rob them of their money and make money. And that's what we have. You know, how can they control a situation like that? They can't. But if we educate the people and they understand that those are civil laws, they have nothing to do with us, and they can challenge jurisdiction and walk out of those courts, those courts will shut down. And if those courts shut down, the police forces will shut down also. I mean, you can have gated communities where people can have their own police, private police force, and they're willing to throw money into a pot to pay for that, so to speak. Well, that's their business. They can do that. That's okay. And a town, I guess, could do that. But how are you going to get a whole town of people to do that because they're so diverse that that couldn't even happen? I couldn't see a lawful way or just way to accomplish that. But in any event, if the courts shut down, the police force shuts down. And then what happens, even the state troopers, that's a corporate police force also. They work for the governor, and the state is incorporated. And they obey the will of the governor. And even though they take an oath, which they have no knowledge of anyway, they don't understand it, the governor tells them to do something illegal, they're going to do it. We've had that case here in New York where, the commissioner, I think it's the commissioner of the state police, I think that's what's his title, or whatever it is, was asked the question, if the governor was to give him an order to go door-to-door to take guns, would he do that? And he said, yep, I'd do it. That's corporate police department. If he didn't say yes, he probably wouldn't have a job the next morning, by the way. You see, therein is the difference with the sheriff. Now, the sheriff is a law enforcement agent. He is not a code enforcer. He's a law enforcer. And if properly trained, he'd be focusing more in protecting the people than protecting the government. And of course, then, he'd be upholding his oath. And there is where we can have compassion, mercy. If we have an educated sheriff's department, where the deputies, of course, are all educated properly in the Constitution and what their jurisdiction is and what their true job really is and how they should be acting, maybe there we can have some success in that kind of a problem, too. But I don't see it the way things are right now. All right, next question. You're muted, by the way.
This has two parts. I have submitted an intake form for foreclosure. How many intake forms may I submit? The second part is I have an alleged debt judgment case that is 10 years old. May I add this case to the action?
We want to be a little careful. Mute yourself while I talk because I'm bouncing off you again, Jan. We want to be very careful in what kind of cases we take on. It is true that all these cases we can take in because they're operating in jurisdictions unknown. You didn't get due process or you're not getting due process. So basically we can take them in. But there may be some cases we may reject right now. I would try not to do that, but it's possible. And then we can deal with them when we get power and authority. You could bring it to the local and deal with your problem there, in the county. Once the people take control over the system, the judicial system, on the law side, the government will control to some degree the equity side. You know, the judges will be up there making those decisions on the equity, the people on the law side. Repeat that question one more time. You're muted, though. Jan?
He wanted to know how many filings he could make. Could he make more than one?
Oh, yeah, how many filings? That's it. Yeah, again, you can file as many as you want. If you got two or three cases, you can file two or three cases. You just talk with Jim about it and work through it. Now, Jim's overloaded right now, so we may, he may be a little slow over the course of the next couple of weeks because he really has a lot to catch up on. And if anybody wants to volunteer their time to help Jim, by all means, get a hold of Jim at intake@nationalliberty.org and work with him. I think he's got a couple of people now working with him. But we got a bottleneck we got to get past. And once we get past, hopefully we'll be able to just keep up on things and move them quickly. Once we are, caught up and familiar enough with the paperwork that we're moving through, it could move very quickly. A petition for joinder to the grand jury, very simple thing to do. It could be accomplished in 2 days, let's say 3 days, if Jim can get it out and the people move it back in quick enough. It could be accomplished in a couple of days. The paperwork would then go out almost immediately after that, as long, again, as we will pass the bottleneck. So we can move these things quick once we, get our ducks in a row, so to speak, get everything. I think we have everything pretty well under control. We have all the papers. I think we've got them perfected to a way that works, and they're pretty, you know, generic. It could be applied to any case because we're always looking at the cause, and the cause in order to get into a federal court is a constitutional violation. When some authority violates your unalienable right of due process, that's a violation, that's a cause. That's what we deal with, and though that's what's actually heard in the courts. And let me make this point clear. All these cases that we're bringing in, we have no need to, you have no need to get into the details and argue the points of the case, because when moving it into the federal court, that's all irrelevant. It's being moved into the federal court because they don't have the jurisdiction, they don't have the authority, and they're not giving you due process. And it's always the same thing. So that's the issue that we fight, that's the issue we can win on, and that's the issue we'll shut the courts down. Now, if they have a lawful way to bring this case against an individual, well, then fine. Then, you know, that would be okay. We'd all accept that. But they don't have a lawful way to do it. And that's why they have to cheat. That's why they have to defraud the people. And that's why we have to stop it. Okay, so next.
This is a comment, I guess, that comes up about every year. And it says, are you familiar with Anna Von Ritz? She's a judge in Alaska who has formed a group who is suing the Department of Justice, and she is successfully setting up common law courts in Alaska. It is an opportunity to form synergy between the two groups.
Yeah, we've been there, tried that with oil and water. She's doing something totally different than what we're doing. Also, there are other things we know that we're just not going to get into that. Buyer beware, that's all I can say. And what she's doing is not compatible with us at all. Next.
Next question. I am interested in a position as a grand jury administrator. Can you please tell me the qualifications, if any, other than the classes you offer?
Yeah, look, the only thing, of course, is, you know, you have to be over 18, you know, and you have to take the courses and be prepared for it and maintain the vow that you're going to take. Anybody who becomes an administrator for the juries, grand jury and trial jury, they have to take a vow. And that vow is a vow to God, that they will proceed with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. And we'll be teaching, and it'll be in the handbooks, different things on how we're going to maintain control of that, because people have to self-police themselves. So four individuals working together, if one person is going astray, so to speak, the other three need to correct them and kind of reel them back in. And we have a plan and a process to deal with problems that people that might come in and be problematic, who doing things wrong, they're not being very just, they're not being very honorable. And that'll all be written up it's going to be in the course, it's in the course, and it also will be in a handbook. We'll have a grand jury, an administrator's handbook. And again, also, we have National Liberty Alliance Monday night meetings where people can come and we can talk about things that we haven't addressed in the book or people can't figure out a solution themselves for, then we can try to help work that out. So, next.
I will be starting a committee of safety soon. In addition to the information provided on the website, what pointers can you suggest?
Yeah, I'm not sure whether we'll pull down the committee of safety stuff or not. Let me explain. The committees of safety, our founding fathers all belonged to the committees of safety. And that was the process that they used in order to form this nation, the committees of safety. And the people that were active as within their communities as committees of safety, those were the people that were chosen by the local people to represent them, okay, in the building of this new government that going back, of course, before 1789 when the Constitution was completed. So that's how we were able to construct and build our nation. Once the nation was built, the committees of safety were not needed in the same way that they were needed prior to that. So what happened is they morphed into the committeeman. And the committeeman takes control in the grassroots level of our political process. And so that's what we're going to be teaching people. We were teaching people to do the committees of safety, and we figured over a time maybe they'd build a membership of people working together in a county, get a relationship with the sheriff and with some of their local governments, and then eventually run for committeeman, because that's where the process really has to lead to, is the committeeman. So I'm not sure what we're going to do with the information on the Committee of Safety. We need to train people to become committeemen. The problem with training people to become committeemen too soon is that they're powerless, because the status quo on a local level, the status quo will not permit the people of taking control of the political process. It's not to their advantage. They need the fraud in place because they have powers and authorities they're not willing to give up. And so the courts will support all that illegal activity. We're trying to change that whole thing, and it can't be changed until we can get into the courts. But I think we're in that process right now. We're at that point where we're leveraging ourselves to get into that court. So people need to be in position of power and authority. So become an elected committeeman, and you have the power and the authority once the court can enforce it and require it. And even if you're a committeeman, and let's say you become a committeeman in January or February, we still haven't accomplished our goal yet, let's say. But maybe by June or July we'll accomplish our goal. Well, you'll be in position, because then you can be brought right into the power of that county and or state, and bring things back under the Constitution. And again, we'll always be here for that training and answering questions and advising people. But the grassroots level has got to take the control and the action. That's where it has to happen, in your counties. So, so again, I think we're going to pull down. I don't want to, again, we have to teach about the committees of safety. But I think we'll take down the information. I'm not sure what we're going to do yet. We've got to talk about that, Jan. Maybe get a few people together and think what we want to do with that, because we don't want to confuse people. And we do want people to go to where the power is at. And the committeeman is where the power is at. All right, next.
Bliss 2, apparently a person's name, Bliss 2, of the John Birch Society, said the NLA papers being filed had no authoritative signature, so he didn't take them too seriously.
Whoa. Bliss, what's this Bliss 2? Is that the person's...
that's a person's name, I believe.
Name? Okay, so that's a screen name. Now, who doesn't have... who said this?
This Bliss, B-L-I-S-S-2-T-E.
No, but who did he say said it?
Well, he said it, and he's a member of the John Birch Society.
But he said, I thought he said that John, did he say that John Birch Society makes that claim against us?
No, he said that he is a member, apparently, of the John Birch Society.
Well, that's only because that's only because he doesn't understand what we're doing. We, the people, have the power and the authority. Read the papers and see the source. We don't just make claims and put them on a piece of paper and send them in. We give the authority, we give the source by which this information comes and the authority by which it comes by, and we make it clear. And the Constitution makes it clear that the people must have the control. It's government by the consent of the people. The Declaration of Independence makes it clear that we have government by consent. The Constitution makes it clear that we, the people, ordained and established this for them. We're above the Constitution. They're below the Constitution. The law requires that the people be under the law and not under statutes, not under codes, not under anything that the government has to say. We owe the government nothing, nothing. And they have no authority over us. And, you know, the 14th Amendment, which talks about civil rights, it says that all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction. I'm not subject to the United States jurisdiction. They're subject to me. How can I be subject to them, to the jurisdiction of the United States? They have no power and authority over me. I'm subject to the law of the land. That's what I'm subject to. So to be subject to the jurisdiction brings you to civil rights, and that's what the 14th Amendment does. It transfers the people to become under the government instead of above the government. People have to get up and take the authority. This is what's so this is our heritage. This is what we're talking about. It's a whole different focus. The way we're operating right now is no different than Europe and Germany. You know, Germany and England and France and Italy, all of Europe, we're operating just like them. We call ourselves a democracy, and we're living under civil rights and not under unalienable rights. That's the problem. We need to wake up. And by the way, we do have a connection, contact, shall I say, with someone from John Birch Society that I'll be calling, matter of fact, this September. We're in September, so I'll be calling them this month, and we're going to be interviewed by those people, and hopefully they'll get educated. I've tried contacting, and I spoke with the president. I forget the guy's name. This is going back about 8 years or so, 6 years. We were talking with them about the committee men and how they should teach the people to become committee men so that they can take control of the political process. And the answer I got back from them from the highest level back then was, we don't get involved in politics. I said, no, you're not understanding. This is not politics. We're talking about the political process, the control of our government, you know, having government by consent. That's what we're talking about here. But they wanted no part with it. They don't understand it. Now, I don't know if the enemy has creeped in and has caused this problem with them, or it's just plain ignorance. And it could be just plain ignorance. But I do know that the enemy is deeply rooted in the John Birch Society and trying to destroy them, just like any other good organization where the people are trying to do good. So, but anyway, he's wrong. Next question, I guess.
Please let me know when the decision and order will be issued in my case number 17 CV 314286.
I don't understand that question. What,
apparently they've merged.
If anyone's going to come here and put a case in and then walk away and not get educated and not get involved to give back to the other people and to help others, we're not interested in helping them with their case then. As a matter of fact, it's a requirement that anybody that has a case that's going to join to us, that they do become a supporting member, that they do take the course government by consent, and they do progress, and they need to get involved somehow. I mean, that we're not lawyers. We're not here to serve the people in that fashion. We're here to help people, teach people, and train people with ourselves to take back this nation. And people need to have that attitude. And if they don't like that attitude or don't want that attitude, then maybe they should go someplace else to get some assistance. Okay, Jan, next.
Okay. I would like to know if somebody can help me punish the bank that sold my house that I had been paying on for 14 years. I hired a lawyer, and the case was going well, but unfortunately the lawyer passed away. And now I'm worse off than before without house and money.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, at punishing, well, I guess that the word could be used, but we shouldn't be thinking that way. We want to get justice, and of course that has consequences to the people who have been doing the wrongdoing. We're going after the court system that is enabling these illegal processes. So we're going after the judge, and we're going after the lawyers. Now, I know the plan, the older part of the plan was we were going after the CEO of a mortgage company and, you know, some or the bank or whatever. But we've changed direction. As much as they deserve also to be, what do they call, well, they're going to lose, if they lose the case, they get punished because, you know, again, they lose the house and the money. And also, the lawyers are the ones that's committing the crime, okay? And so we're going after the lawyers. Also, going after the CEOs or the whole board of directors for some kind of a corporation, that's too involved for what we're doing. We're not here to really do that. We had taken on two types of cases and actually went on to three or four, and that pretty much is the kind of cases we're taking on, which is non-judicial foreclosures, habeas corpuses, and the family court system, the child protective service problems, and the family court with that, and the adult protective services. Now, there are other things we are taking on also, but we want to be a little careful with it. But that's where we were focusing in order to help those people who are stuck in courts, who are being abused in the courts, and trying to help them to get some relief. And at the same time, using whatever work we do in assisting them, if we write the amicus curiae for them or other papers to move or whatever, it also becomes evidence. You see, the more cases we have joined to us is more evidence of the corruption in the courts, showing the fact that it is RICO on steroids. They're out of control, these people. They're destroying families. They're destroying people. They're taking money and houses. It's legal robbery, not lawful. And it's not really legal either, but they have that fiction of law that makes it appear to be legal. So, all right, next.
When filing a joinder form in the attorney section, is it okay to put the state attorney general and the county district attorney general on the form if the court that has the case will not give the attorney's name that is trying to prosecute? I'm having trouble getting any information out of this court.
You're talking about traffic court because that's the only place where they're not given the names of who the prosecutor is. And that's kind of a new thing I've seen over the years, you know. Going back a few years, they didn't have these people up there acting as prosecutors in a traffic court. It's usually the cop and you and the judge, and that's it. But then a few years back, all of a sudden I started to see that they have some lawyer coming in representing as a prosecutor in these traffic courts. So that's probably the kind of court they're talking about. And in order to get a hold of who that person is, because I've had this problem before, is if they don't want, if the court doesn't want to up the name of the person, and they won't, then you go to the county. Because remember, in those town courts, they do some cases, which they don't have the power or the authority to do, but they do them anyway, where they might imprison someone, and they claim up to a year in prison that they can do this without an indictment. But whenever they do that, they have the county prosecutor. Someone comes from the county's office, the prosecutor, and they'll do those cases. So there is already a connection between the court and the county prosecutor. So just make the assumption that the county prosecutor is the guy or woman, and name them and serve them. What you'll find is, what I have found, is they'll send a letter back saying that they don't handle those cases in that court, but they forward it on to the person who does. And they give you the name and the address. And what I do is not only allow that forwarding to take place, I also serve again directly to that individual who is acting as the prosecutor. That's how you get them. Stay away from anything else. We have all of the listings of who we're going after in the petition for the questions we ask in order to create that petition to join the. That's all we're going after, is really all of the lawyers, the bar attorneys in the court case, and the judge. That's who we're going after. we can't extend it any further because it becomes too complex, and that's not what we're here for. We have to keep it simple. Now, that doesn't mean that people can't go and sue other people at a later date, maybe like when the courts open up that are honest and true and just again. That's when you can open up your court and pursue further damages and should be able to get some traction in that court as long as it's just and righteous. So, all right, next. We've got to be coming to an end here. How many more are left?
Here is a summary of my debt collector case in California. I am working with James on joining the grand jury case. First, the court issued a void summary judgment. I received notice of involuntary lien filed by plaintiff. I filed my own challenge of jurisdiction using NLA's documents on the website on August 27th, and my hearing will be on October 31st. Questions: do I need to file any motion to challenge the court's judgment?
Well, I don't have any idea of what knowledge you have and what, so that you know what to do next or how to respond in the court if you're going to handle that paperwork. Those people, we put those papers there, those forms for people who have experience and know what to do if the court does this or the court does that. If you're using our paperwork, then you're challenging their jurisdiction. And if you're challenging their jurisdiction, you have to understand that jurisdiction must be decided. That's what the law says. It must be decided. But, a one-sided decide is not being decided. So if that judge decides to decide the case and decides it for themselves, well, you'll probably find out that they made that decision with only your paperwork, but no paperwork from the opposing side, okay? So if they didn't get any paperwork from the opposing side, well, they just broke the structure of their own court because, the affidavit rules the court, unrebutted. An affidavit unrebutted rules the court. And if you did this in affidavit form, then that judge must find for you and say, yes, we don't have jurisdiction because no one rebutted it. The other thing is that also proves the fact that they're biased and they need to recuse themselves. And the most important thing is that court really can't make a decision. If you read the paperwork very carefully, you'll find out that that decision has to be made in a court of record court, okay, which, again, there are none. They're only in name only. If that, I don't even see that. I see it referred to as courts of record, but I never see it in writing from any of these people that it's a court of record. Because, again, remember, they have consolidated common law, so they claim, and equity, and they don't even use the word equity, but civil cases, and they call them civil actions, and they made it one, which is not possible. But in any event, again, if you don't understand what's going on and how this works and what the next step is, you're going to get yourself in more trouble and you're not going to get anywhere. You're just going to be, and you're going to lose unless you can get out of there. So, and even moving it into federal court, it doesn't mean you're going to win moving it into federal court either. If you can intimidate the judge enough to feel that he's at risk, that's when you'll get a win. And the win will probably be not a ruling from the court, but the judge convincing the other side, sort of ordering the other side, work out a deal, get this out of my court, because they don't want to make a ruling against the grain of status quo there. How many more do we have left?
There's another two parts of this and then one other.
Let's see if we can get through it quickly because I'm going to move on.
Okay.
Matter of fact, let's put this off until next week. We'll pick those up next week. Let's open the queue up because we're running out of time. I don't know if Brent is here. Is Brent here?
Yeah, he's here.
All right, Brent, this week I'm going to kind of skip you because I really wanted to focus in on what we're doing, and hopefully next week you'll pick up. But you're welcome to pipe into any answers to any of the questions or make any comments to any of the things we're doing. We got about an hour and we got about 40 minutes left, but I want to get to the questions and answers. So let's do that, okay? We'll take our first caller. Now, let's see. Click on, I want to click on the wrong one. Next. Okay. We've got 408-830 number. What's your first name and your state?
Hi, my name is Ted, and I'm in California. And I'll just make a quick comment, and that is earlier when you were speaking, you're absolutely correct. When the judges go quiet, you've just hit a bullseye. That's what they do. And the second thing, you said that judges don't, in your experience, pull documents from court case files. We have a judge that's so crazy out here that he absolutely has pulled pleadings from files. And he's even, in my case, kept my court case file locked up.
Hello, I was wondering
what happened to the person we're just talking to? Hold on. Did we hang on a second, Terry? Let me unmute that other. What happened to that person? Did someone hit the? Let me unmute them.
Okay, I'm back. Somebody muted.
Oh, wait. Go ahead. What were you saying? We'll take you next, Terry. Go ahead. What was your first name again?
My name's Ted in California.
Ted. Okay, Ted.
And like I said.
You know, I don't know that the judge physically went himself. He probably ordered a clerk to go do it. I doubt he went physically himself to do it. Do you think he did that physically himself?
He's done it many times. And
but he probably told the clerk to do it for him, no? Well, you don't know.
Well, I mean, I didn't witness it, but the fact that I'm also telling you that he kept my court case file locked up in his chambers for 3 months, and he threatened all of the clerks that if I came to court and ended up in front of another judge, that he would, you know, do something bad to them. And in fact, I was on an ex parte in front of another judge, and this judge sent two deputies over to order me out of that courtroom.
Hmm. Well, again,
the guy's a maniac.
There's nothing more dangerous than ignorance and action, and that's what you got. And until we start putting these people in jail for these actions as tyrants and subversion, you know, they're committing treason against us by concealing our cases, preventing us access to our courts of law, denying us due process. All of those are violations. They're felonies, and we need to deal with these people. But we can't deal with – well, we are dealing with them now in the sense that we're indicting, we're filing papers, we're making decisions, and we're indicting. It doesn't matter that they're not obeying. It doesn't matter that they're not being brought into the court and tried yet. None of that matters. It's all on the record. It's there. And we keep building and building and building, and the pressure keeps building and building and building, and that dam is going to break eventually. And we don't know exactly how it's going to happen. We do know that we've got Trump watching what we're doing. Maybe something will come from that direction. We're going to be going out to radio programs, more radio programs and interviews from larger areas. You know, people have large followings where we're going to bring our message to them. And we can build up and get critical mass from that. You know, about a month or two ago, we're on one radio program, and we pulled in about 100 people in about a week, which was pretty decent just from going on that one program. Okay, so if we can get a message out, we can be pulling a lot of people and building up our membership, educating people, getting more people behind us, bringing more cases in, putting more and more stress and weight on these people that are preventing the law from being practiced. They're concealing our courts of law.
That's all the comment I'll make tonight. But my case all started as a foreclosure on my home of 32 years. So.
Well, again, you know, if you want to bring it in with us and do a joinder, we'll help you out and get it to that point to a decision. And it may take a while before it has any effect, but But one day it will, and I don't think that day's far away. I don't see taking a year, not at all. You look at Trump has got to, this, in my opinion, from everything I can see, and this is a very, very strong opinion I hold, Trump's first term has got to deal with the deep state, got to take him out. You know, he worked the first 2 years to rebuild back and restructure our nation in many ways and bring back the economy and bring things up, get business back coming in and try and going out making peace with nations. And by his second term, is really going to be working on really dealing with our economic problem, our monetary problem, and I do believe also peace around the world. He's trying to make peace with everyone. And, you know, if you obey the Constitution and obey what our founding fathers' strategy and philosophy was to trade, be friends with all and trade with them, you know. Don't get lost in their bickering and problems and stuff. Get out of that. But be friends with everyone. Look at it. If we're friendly with people and we're sharing our trade with them, okay, over time we will influence them on our nature of who we are. You know, it's just like witnessing. You know, if you're a Christian, your best witness is just doing good and doing the right thing, being honest, and just doing the right thing. And if we as a nation do that, then we're witnessing to other nations. The people of those other nations will desire what we have. We have the power to potentially change governments just by doing the right thing, trading with people, and being a good neighbor in a national sense. You know, so.
Well, I just want to thank you for all the hard work, and I know you guys have been going for many years, and just thank you very much.
Appreciate that. Thanks, Terry. Okay, let's take on next caller. It is Judson from Los Angeles, L.A.?
From actually Ouachita Parish in Louisiana.
Louisiana, L.A., okay.
Gotcha. Let's see. My mom actually had a question. Y'all actually answered the question earlier about the militia. Let's see. She was wondering about the birth certificate, and another sovereign instructed me on accepting things for value, returning them for discharge, exempt from levy. Would you be able to expound on that?
Well, yeah, that's all commercial stuff, and we shouldn't be involved in that. We should be involved in the law. We're not involved in the commercial activities, and so we shouldn't try to use the commercial law to get something going, and we may burn ourselves doing that because we're going in places that we don't know all of the rules and the codes. I mean, you have to really be practiced in whatever title it is that you're dealing with and using, and if you're acting commercial, then you're going to be treated commercial. No, we have to act as people and be treated as people. You know, as far as the, and therefore be under the law and not the statute, or shall I say the equity courts. You know, as far as the birth certificate is concerned, we need to think about that, research that, and, you know, it has a good side to it, but it also has a bad side to it. You know, people have already accepted this idea, for instance, of the birth certificate. They've accepted the idea of the Social Security card. They've accepted the idea of a lot of things that the government does that shouldn't be doing and putting us underneath these things, you know. We have to think about these things. I don't really have a solution. I haven't given a lot of thought to it. You know, take the marriage certificate. That's something I think should be done away with totally. The government shouldn't be involved in that. It is true a magistrate can do a marriage, but going to get a license, think about that. You're getting a license to get married, okay? God doesn't talk about getting a license to get married, and we shouldn't have to go through that process. And here is the problem. When you go get a license to get married, you just took in a third party in your contract between yourself and your wife, because getting married is a contract. It's a covenant, really. And now you've taken the government in as your part of the covenant, and that's why you have all these laws concerning marriage, and they have the divorce things and a process and the statutes and, you know, a process by which they go through to get the divorce and so on and so forth. But they, and again, they make money on all that. They make money on the marriage. They make money on the divorce. The lawyers make a lot of the dollars, and the judges make the dollars just by doing the work. That's a major problem. Now, birth certificate, again, I don't like that idea of the birth certificate myself. Something we need to think about. I don't have a solution or a thought on that yet.
Okay. Thanks for that. I'm also wondering about, you spoke on subrogation earlier. How would you use that properly in the courtroom?
I spoke on what? Subrogation?
Yeah, invoking your right to subrogation or demanding that. I believe you spoke on subrogation.
Yeah, no, I don't recall particularly. I don't know. I don't know how I can answer the question. Can you word it in a different way?
Subrogation, it's about using a third party, I guess the straw man is what it refers to.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, look, that's the man on the, again, A, you're going into their sandbox. B, you're giving them credibility. You're acknowledging them having a jurisdiction and authority and power. So right off the bat, we're approaching this from the wrong direction. That's a major problem. And going into their sandbox, you better be careful, because if there's any way they can burn you in that sandbox, they're going to do it. And they may even go after you for fraud. Look at, we had a guy who was a member, disappeared a while back, because he went after the government and used the commercial system, the commercial thing to go after them. And he won the case and got a check, $100,000+. Okay, so he went and cashed the check, and 30 days after he cashed the check, they raided his home to arrest him. Turned out he wasn't home, so he's on the run. I don't know if he's still on the lam, but in any event, they came out after him because they were going after him for fraud. Once they cashed the check, and for some reason they waited 30 days, I don't know why, but whatever. Once he cashed the check, now they came after him, and they're going to use their laws to get him. I would not mess with that stuff at all. Besides that, again, you're playing in the commercial realm. I mean, you're claiming to be under the commercial jurisdiction and not under the law. I don't want to be under commercial jurisdiction. I want to be under the law. So every time you get into that man on the land stuff, it's really going to take you down a wrong road. And the other thing is, I hear people claiming to be successful, but I don't know anybody that's really been successful at it. And maybe a person here or there might have been, but generally speaking, these people end up in more trouble than they already started out with. So I wouldn't even go down that road. And I came into this from that perspective. I studied that myself, and when my introduction to law and looking at all these things and trying to figure things out and how to deal with this government that just is denying and rejecting and being silent everything we're doing, that's what I was looking at. But I also found a lot of problems, and I realized that's not the way to go. It just doesn't work. It's too dangerous.
Thank you for clarifying that. In regards to when you use the word person, I'm not sure if everybody's familiar with the word person in regards to law.
I try to use the word people more often than anything, but I will use the word person from time to time. I might define it, put a little footnote on it, possibly. I used to. I don't know that I do that anymore, though. The bottom line is I don't acknowledge their fiction.
Okay.
First of all, they're not going to turn around and say, aha, we got you. You see that word person? It really means corporation. And, you know, we got you in the commercial game here now. You know, look, they're not going to do that. So I'm not going to do it. So it's going to be, it's not going to be an argument in the court. I wouldn't worry about it. But again, be very careful. I call myself one of the people. you know, in this court of record. And, you know, you say your name, one of the people of my case, New York, in this court of record, sues, blah, 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 blah.
Gotcha. So once we
play the word game with them, once mm-hmm. we play that word game, we're empowering them. We're in their sandbox and we're giving them power. I give them nothing. I give them fraud. That's what they are.
So, I've noticed that y'all clearly define your terminology in your paperwork. Would it be good for a sovereign to put that in with their paperwork to clearly define their terms and their affidavits?
Absolutely. Depending on the case and what you're doing. I don't do it that much on some words like person. I don't really get involved anymore. On the personal cases, I was, but we're on the bigger side of things. We're coming as we the people through the grand jury up against these people. We don't worry about defining the word person or citizen. I don't run away from the word citizen either. You know, they don't own that word. And just because I'm a citizen of a particular state or whatever, I can change and become a citizen of basically I'm a citizen of the United States, because I can go to any state and be a citizen of that state. If people come and they get and they go through the process to become a citizen, they become a citizen of the United States. They don't become a citizen of New York. They don't become a citizen of New Jersey. And the Constitution doesn't write it up that way. You know, it brings them in to become a citizen of the United States. And what that means is you're a citizen in all the states, and whatever state you choose to live in, you know, that's it. You're a citizen of that state. But you still have the power and the authority. If I'm traveling through New Jersey, I have all the rights that I've had, and the same in Jersey as in New York. It's still all the same. But I don't get too lost in that at all. I don't worry about it. And our founding fathers used the word citizen, too, by the way.
Okay. This guy was instructing me on a upper and lowercase citizen in regards to U.S. citizens with the formation of the birth certificate.
You're empowering them again. I wouldn't do that. You know, I'm going to call it all a fraud, and I'm going to talk Constitution and law. That's where I'm going to be, Constitution and law. And they can't respond. They have no words. They can't respond because they're guilty. So anyway, I would not get into their sandbox.
All right. Have you ever heard of freedom-school.com?
No. Freedom-school.com. No, I don't. Oh, no.
It's got a lot of documents archived on there, so I just highly recommend it for everybody. I'm going to bow out.
They have forms,
different
forms?
It's where I came originally educated in sovereignty and law about 3 years ago. It's where I got a lot of my documents and used them as evidentiary attachments and exhibits in my case law.
Yeah, here's one of the problems. It's a major problem. You know, the United States Supreme Court, back through the Rules Act of 1934, and they acted upon that with the rules in 1938, and they brought everything together and claimed it all to be under civil action. Okay, so when we go into these courts, their jurisdiction's unknown. And the more and more that I've been learning, the more and more I see how they really boxed us into something. You can't really go into their courts and make a good position because you're in a civil court. You're not in a court of record. And you're not in a court where the law is applied. You're in a court where statutes are applied, where civil statutes, civil law is applied. It's a big problem, and again, that's why we structured the case that we've got going now. We've structured it in such a way as to, as best we can, make it clear who we are and what kind of a jurisdiction we're applying, which, of course, is a court of record under natural law. But anyway... They made a mess of this thing. They robbed us of our heritage.
I guess we got to get it back. Right on.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
We definitely do, and that's what we're trying to do. All right. I appreciate the call. Let's go to the next caller. Okay, next person is 484 number. Give us your first name and your state, 401. 484-401.
Hey, John. This is Jeff. I'm in Pennsylvania.
Hey, Jeff.
And I've spoken with you before. I'm in a state of extreme despair at the moment, very despondent. I'm facing a possible tax sale of my home on Friday. I have been in this home for over 45 years.
They do the same. Again, that's a non-judicial foreclosure process. They do it in REM. And on top of all of that, the taxing of your property is unlawful also. Because if they can tax your property every year, you don't own it, do you? You're paying them rent or something, you know, or usage of your land.
Extortion, essentially.
Yeah, extortion, exactly.
Because I'm not exercising any taxable privilege.
Right.
There is a right to own property.
The only thing I can suggest to you is to do a joinder, and we go through the process. You probably won't be able to get things done in time to save your home, but at least you're putting yourself in a position to get it back or at least get compensated for it. So by doing a joinder, that could help. If you are savvy enough and you know how the things work, you can try to do it on your own and use our forms. But again, like I said, if you don't know the next step and the next step,
one
of the major problems is we don't have courts of law open, so you're never really going to get into a court of law. You got to get up to the federal level and make the judge nervous and to try to get that case out of his court so he doesn't have to go up against the status quo. And believe me, when that judge decides he's not going to go up, he's not going to go against you, okay? He's not going to do it by ruling. He's going to go and push the other side to make a deal to get out.
Well, the stress is absolutely incredible. I've tried to get a home equity loan. I'm being denied just to pay off this enormous tax. I've been fighting it for a while, of course, and I have been in contact with Jim Bearson. And a kind lady called me the last, I guess it was Saturday, and she asked my name and address because I did file some papers with you back in 2017 about the non-judicial foreclosure.
Right. So then we can, if you've got that paper in, we can go right to a move for cause into the court, and that bypasses the step of challenging the jurisdiction. We go right into move for court for cause, and they need to answer us in the federal court here in the Northern District. That might slow things down, but what they will do is they'll make a phone call. The judge over there will probably make a phone call to the court up there to see what's going on. And, you know, if they talk to the clerks or something, the clerks, we made it clear to the clerk that by telling people that our court case is closed down on the phone, that's concealment as much as anything else. You're concealing our case over the phone. That's a crime, and we're going to indict you. So we made that clear to everyone here in the Northern District. Now, the judge is so deeply lost, we've already got two indictments on him already, okay? And he's trying to close us down, but I don't think he's going to actually physically go with his fleshly hands and go into the files and pull the paper out. I don't think he's going to do that. The only way he'll do that, in my opinion, is he'll order the clerk. And if the clerk has the fear of the people and the fear of God in them, then they're going to say, well, look, I don't want to get indicted. Oh, these guys are not those. I just don't want to do it because it's the law. I can't remove it, you know. If you want to remove it, go take it. You know, there's a law in there talks about intimidation. If a judge intimidates the clerk in order to remove or conceal, destroy, mutilate, whatever, a legal document, that's 20 years in prison for both of them. So that's under USC 18, and that applies to them.
Yes.
So. But anyway, you could do it. When are they supposed to be trying to do this?
Friday they have it scheduled. I did file some paperwork. I'd have to talk to you off the air about it.
If he's off to Jim, Jim's probably on the call right now, but if he's missing this for some reason, you talk to Jim. If you want to push it, tell Jim that I said to move you right away. Get that paperwork. We got the paperwork ready to go, and we can do it. If you can, get your T's crossed and your I's dotted and quickly with Jim, we literally can get the papers out before Friday. And maybe that'll have some clout on this, at least even maybe to put it off for another day. We're going to see what's going to happen when these judges or clerks or whatever call the other court to see what's going on. You know, because what they try to do, they try to destroy everything by rules, and usually be judge to judge, you know, to destroy it with the rule, or a lawyer that's operating on behalf of the court with a judge up here. And they go behind the scenes to try to work it out. Hey, let's throw them out under the rules, you know. Any event. We'll see what happens. We don't know what's going to happen yet. But anyway, in any event, no matter what does happen, let's say they close and they kick you out. Well, your paperwork is in play. It's still there. At some point, it's going to have to be dealt with. And I believe it's going to be later.
Right. The thing that is confusing to me is I checked my property record in the county. There's nothing on file there from the Tax Claim Bureau. They have nothing there. They have created a counterfeit tax deed. They're going to sell to a third party. I don't get a hearing. I don't get nothing.
In rem.
It drives me up the wall, John. It's crazy.
Yeah, we're all up. We're all angry over this. I maintain my peace in my mind and my heart, but let me tell you, these people are evil. They need to pay. And I'm not going out for vengeance. I just want the law to be applied, and these people need to stop. And the people that are committing evil, and they're told, and they know that they're committing evil, and they're warned, and they're told, and they're warned, and they're told, well, these people do need to go to jail. They need to be an example to others as much as anything else. But they don't need to go to jail as an example. But to some degree, you know, there is much to be said in the fact that they should be seen as an example. You break the law, you're going to have to pay the toll, you know? So,
right. And it's just stealing is what it is.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're kind of running out of time, so I want to move to the next call. You got anything final?
I'm at a loss for words, John. I'm just, very despondent at this point.
Go get yourself a good night's sleep, but tomorrow wake up and get the paperwork in. That's what you should do. Just get the paperwork in at least. It could maybe stall it out. It could work. We don't know how this is going to go yet because this is our next step that we're working on.
Right. You got a fax number there. Can I fax it in?
Fax what in?
The paperwork.
Well, look, it's best to do it by email because it'll be a cut.
I'm not even thinking clearly. Yeah, okay.
And it's only a few pieces of information. We don't really need a lot of information. We've boiled it down to less than a page, really, I think. We just need the basic information, and you should have all that at hand, the name of the court, the name of the judge, the address, any of the lawyers involved with their addresses, and the court number, and that's pretty much it. You know, there's not much more than that. Your name and stuff. So it's not a lot of information that you need. Once you get that to Jim, he can put that if he expedites it. I think he should be able to do this. But if he expedites it, he could probably get your paperwork prepared within the day. You can sign it, get it back. And the next day he could be working on the move for cause.
He already sent me the joined form. Yeah, I've got that.
Yeah. So Jim's already Jim and I have gone through the move for cause paper, and we've made it very simple. We've already got all the information. We don't need any more information from you. We just transfer that information that we have on you into this paperwork. You know, the court of origin, all the players involved, and then we get that back to you. Okay, and then you have to get that notarized and get a copy back and go through the filing. It could be done. And since you have the joinder almost done, you could probably do this in a day or two.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay. Thank you, John.
All right. Thank you. Let's take our next caller here. Hit the next button. Let's see who the next person. Crystal from Connecticut. How you doing, Crystal? We don't want to get too much into a court case tonight, though. If you got anything quick to share with us, that's good, because we only got a few minutes left, and I want to stick one point. But go ahead, Crystal. Crystal. Crystal from Connecticut.
Hey, hello.
Hey, how you doing, Crystal? Go right ahead.
How are you? I was resting.
Let's try to keep it short because we only got a few minutes left and we got a lot of people in the queue.
Well, as I said, they had cut it out of my house and they stripped the roof and everything off. You know, and I guess people are looking into, you know. I sent you all the paperwork, so I don't want to get into it. I sent you everything pertaining to that property. And everything, it looks pretty good. It was, you know, it was definitely a false thing that they did. And I also sent you the copies of the police reports and all. And thank God I did all that stuff way in the beginning.
Did you decide whether you want to do a joinder with us or not?
I'll call you and speak to you tomorrow in the morning because I just want to go over something with you because my stuff is a little bit different because I'm in the private now. I got the teachers that are recruiting the children for the LLA and what's going on there.
Well, remember, you know, we would be taking the position in your case, we'd be taking it from the standpoint of constitutional violations. We wouldn't even be bothering arguing any of their points because they don't have the jurisdiction over you. We'd be arguing jurisdiction and they're, you know, claiming to be a court and not giving you your due process, and that's what we'll win on. You know, again, them acknowledging it and obeying it, that's another thing altogether. But, again, getting it into the court, getting the paperwork done, applying it, and it becomes more pressure at some point, you know, we're going to get forward on this thing. It's going to happen at some point.
But I'm out of the court at this point. I will call you and let you know, I'm going to explain something when I'm done, you know.
Right.
All my... Okay, I will call you in the morning. I'll keep you abreast on everything that's going on. Okay.
All right.
Okay.
And if you decide to do the joiner, just let Jim know, and we'll do it for you. So.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right. Thank you.
Bye bye. Okay. Thanks, Crystal. Okay, let's take our next caller. Is Greg from Michigan.
Hello, you hear me?
We can hear you, Greg.
Hi. Right. I am wanting to do the joinder with you guys with my case here in the Detroit area. I have been talking with some guys that tried to help me initially when my case first began more than a year ago when I first started going to court. And they cited a lot of constitutional case laws, constitutional provisions, all very valid in my opinion, and I was very new at this at the time. I still am, basically, but I've learned a bit. The court simply ignored it. They just wouldn't pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's what I said on the earlier part of our program tonight is, you know, people don't realize that our Constitution is, they've nullified our Constitution. They're not applying it. They're not telling us this, but get yourself into court in a situation and you'll find out you don't have unalienable rights. You don't have a constitution protecting you in the courts no more. We've lost our heritage. You know, our heritage is ultimately to be under the law. That's our heritage, and we get the blessings of liberty for being under the law of God. And they have robbed us, taken away. And bear in mind, you know, Jefferson spoke about this, that God's judgment cannot rest forever, okay? And believe me, his wrath is upon anyone who assaults or injures his children. And they may get away with something for a while, but in the end, they're going to pay for it. And these people are really going up right in the face of God. They're changing his court, his laws. I mean, look what the United States Supreme Court, they legalized abortion. That doesn't belong in an equity court. That's a court of law. They're stepping on God's toes. They're denying God's law. They're changing. They think that they have the power. The Bible talks about this. They think they have the power to change the laws and the times. No, they don't. It's a matter of time. God's wrath is upon them, or about to be upon them. Let's put it that way.
I've said similar things to some of the clerks and things just in passing. You know, I'm sure they scoff at it and think, you know, I'm some holy roller or whatever. But I've given that kind of warning that they're going to be judged someday.
That's
for
right.
What they're doing to people like myself. I'm far from the only one. They just don't think so. They don't believe it, not just yet. They'll see, and I firmly believe that, John. My question is this. These guys I was working with here, they want to work with me to do some a lawsuit against some of these people, and not necessarily just the judges or prosecutors, but some of the building department people involved, some of the township managers involved. I want to know if there would be a conflict that would harm my case if I worked with your joinder, which I think is basically based on, you know, the jurisdiction, the challenge to jurisdiction, which these guys here tell me they don't think will work, because they say I have tacitly accepted their jurisdiction by going to their court, something along those lines. Like,
right.
I've cooperated.
Yeah, they could play that game. Look, at the United States Supreme Court, their boss, has ruled that jurisdiction, once challenged, must be decided, but that jurisdiction can be challenged at any time. When you discover that you are being defrauded, it's not that you're saying, well, okay, you know you're being defrauded, and you stayed in the court and fought them for a year, and now you're going to turn around and they claim, oh, you can't do that because you gave us jurisdiction by fighting us and blah, 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 blah. Nothing could be further from the truth, okay, number one. But number two, the key thing is this. It's fraud. They've committed a crime. For every injury, there must be a remedy. They've injured you. Okay, there must be a remedy to that. Nothing can stop that. No rule can stop that. None of their statutes can stop that. I mean, in the fictional courts and the fictional system, they do stop that, and they can stop that. And that's the battle we're up against. But again, it's only a matter of time. It's only a matter of time. And again, it's up to the people to get educated and get on board, and let's do something and take the power and take the authority themselves on the grassroots level. We will teach you how.
Well, what I want to know is there a conflict that would harm my case in general if I worked on the lawsuits with you and with these guys locally, which would be a bit different? Would it make some...
Well, I don't see that, if anything... Okay, your case again is what now?
Basically, in retaliation for me speaking out about different political policies and proposed department head pay raises, which were very exorbitant, things like that, on a few occasions in recent years, they finally, and the DPW head got very ticked at me, and he had a 40% pay raise proposed. And after I spoke against that at a meeting, which a number of people spoke against, but I spoke very effectively, and they changed it down to half that amount afterward. And I know that he largely blamed some of the things I said about that. Anyway, so after that, long story short, I suddenly start getting all these citations about supposed ordinance violations of, you know, of with structures and things on my property that had been there for more than a decade.
Right.
They never raised any issues.
Well, look at. They're coming out for vengeance. They're being vindictive, okay?
And
if you fight them, just fighting them is going to make them more vicious and more vindictive, okay? So I don't see anything getting any worse. Maybe you'll put the fear of the people and the fear of God into them by going through our process. I don't know.
But I mean, my question is there harm in me working with these guys here on a legal case as well as with you?
No, absolutely not. Why would there be? No.
Because I don't know the law that well, John, and maybe it's...
Well, again, you know, they make it up as they go. The law is this. You don't have to answer underneath their statute. That's the law. You're free from any legislative law. You're free from that. Now, of course, they don't believe that, and they're applying it against you, and against is nothing more dangerous than ignorance and action, and we empower them by genuflecting to them, by accepting it and just moving on. We've given them the authority. Now we, the people, got to get together and take it away from them because they shouldn't have it.
So I can do a suit with you and a suit with these local guys you think it's all right? It's not going
to... Well, again, you know, you're going to have to, if you move it into the court for cause, okay, you're going to have to be silent at least during that process. If they ignore it and they continue to pursue things and they just ignore what we've done, you have every right to defend yourself in any way you know. So to continue under those circumstances, yes. But I would say until they default, we make the move. They got 30 days because it's a show cause.
Mm-hmm.
So they got 30 days. And if they default, then we'll send them a paper of a default and a decision. And if they ignore it, well, then at that point, you can do whatever you have to do to continue to defend yourself. But during that time period, I would think you'd have to be silent from any activity. So you're looking at about 35 days of doing nothing.
Wait out the 30 days and take it from there.
Right.
Okay.
I say 35 because, you know, you figure you start counting the day they get it. So let's say it takes 2 days to get there. And then the day they get it, that doesn't count. So that's 3 days, and now you have to wait 30 days. So you got 33 days, and you give it to that two extra days, so 35. So generally speaking, we're working off a 35-day.
That's fine. And with me, though, you don't want, you were saying earlier, you don't want the building department heads that were involved or his township supervisor girlfriend, who was also...
Right. We're just doing...
The prosecutors alone to start, is that right?
That's all. Just the lawyers. They're the ones that's doing the game.
Initiated this against me, but yes, they handled it in court, of course, right? Because I'd like to sue them all.
Well, again, you can go for further damages at a later time, but you want to stop them is the key.
The judges and the prosecutors only. Okay.
Right.
Okay. And when a friend of mine told me today, she's dealing with her own legal battles here in Michigan, which a lot of people are, it seems, with unscrupulous.
Everywhere.
Yeah, I understand. I know. Michigan just really seems terrible, though. But anyway, she was telling me you only have 2 years to go after a prosecutor who you think did some wrongdoing against you in a case. Is that correct? Is there a two-year time?
Well, that's called statutes of limitations, and since there's no statute in court. Huh?
I've heard of the 7-year statute of limitations, but a 2-year one I didn't know.
It doesn't matter. It's a statute of limitation. There are no statutes in a court of law. If you have a case that's 50 years old, okay, and you want to resurrect that case, chances are you're not going to be able to resurrect it because people are dead, evidence is lost, you know, all that's gone. But if you've got the evidence and you got the witnesses and the case is 50 years old and you can pull it together, well, hey, you got a case. There is no statute of limitations in common law because there are no statutes.
Well, I had never heard before.
It's controlled by the point that either the court is fresh and you can get all the evidence and win, or it's no longer fresh and you can't get the evidence and you can't win it. That's the only thing that'll govern that case.
And I have 3 different case numbers, actually, 2 regarding the same issue, which they pulled some sleight of hand and made a second case out of it, and then another case that they also decided a different form of retaliation over me, just about another ordinance violation. But I guess I have to do each one separately according to
Jeff. Yeah, because they're going to make three different issues, and if you beat one, the other two still stand, so you have to do all three. So.
Yeah, okay. Okay, you've answered my questions, and I appreciate it, John. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
What you guys are doing. Thank you.
Okay. All right, we'll take our next caller. We're past the midnight hour, but we'll stay on for a few more minutes anyway. So let's take Dan from the Carolinas.
Greetings. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, Dan.
Oh, you hear me okay?
We're getting you. Go right ahead.
Very good. It's been a while back, but you guys have been so busy from that moment. We were talking about you guys possibly could post a common law trust. I've got some parties that this very minute's got some heavy equipment right close to my house on some waterfront lots, and they have posted something from some permits from a town, and I won't call its name, but this town has been noticed by me, me going publicly on many occasions and stating to them that they're trespassing on my grandfather's estate, my father's estate, and my mother's estate, and I spelled it out pretty well and to them, and it's well documented on several occasions to this particular town. Matter of fact, I won't go but just a second here to say that North Carolina legislatures absolutely got complaints near Southport, North Carolina, at a particular area down there where towns were overstepping their boundaries with what is called involuntary, I call it involuntary servitude, but the correct terminology is involuntary annexation. That's a hard word for me to say. And so the North Carolina legislators found that several towns up around Cary and Raleigh and Durham, not to be lengthy here, because we have other people possibly, and that had similar situations. So the legislators put this with the help of Mr. Eiler. I'm going to have to give him credit out of Southport and Oak Island area, House of Representatives, Mr. Frank Eiler. And, boy, they came back with a true bill. And this particular town that I'm dealing with at this very minute has been noticed with this information coming from the legislators, still will they're trespassing on my family's particular estate, which is about 830 acres and approximately. And so with that said, I've got a old golden opportunity right now. I went to the day to a sign company, and I told them exactly what I wanted on this particular sign for no trespassing, and the first thing would be caveat emptor with a little tilde in front of caveat and with one at the back end of the word emptor. Then it would go further in for further notices, specifically this particular town, any of those officials coming from that town, any contractors, any real estate agents, any persons
so
claiming.
These signs are concerning keeping people off your property?
Well, it's inside this. I've got signs at my particular property, and I had to deal with those jokers that I'm telling that town council
but
several years ago.
It's kind of late, and I don't think we have the time to get too deep in this, but
right,
are you talking
right.
about maybe, you know, I'm not sure I understand what you're talking about. If you're not talking about your own personal property, you're looking
oh,
to
no,
put signs.
No, the whole 830 acres, see, if you remember back there, my father paid off the mortgage, and my estate attorney in this particular county here, he has a document showing where these funds were paid. Actually, a federal land bank. And then my parents also paid, my father specifically, paid the taxes, ad valorem taxes. And there's never been a settlement whatsoever. And I've carried this to every little town around this particular island here that is being involved, and one particularly right now. And so this, so you understand real quickly, this town, just a few lots from where my homestead is, Maryland Island, is has gifts and permits to a contractor to come in and build a single dwelling inside of the 830-acre tract. I will, as you remember several months ago, I want a common law trust guidelines document and then some further advice. So we can't ask you to do all the advice tonight because I think you've talked about it before, because we may have some other people here. Maybe
yeah,
I can get a hold of
it. It's kind of late, so we can't get too much into this kind of a discussion, but try to finish up, and maybe another day we can do some
yes.
of the detail. But we should try to be really focused on what it is that, you know, that you're looking at trying to do.
Yeah. But, yeah. Well, you remember, you know, you guys are real busy, but you may have put that common law trust inside somewhere for benefit, not only me, but there's probably countless others that could use something to go by to draft a common law trust.
I think I put the information up on the website, and I probably put it up on the page where all of our forms are.
Well, anyway, I'll try to contact Mr. Jan tomorrow for some other things, because it is late, and there might be some other people there, and go over a few things for Mr. Jan, and hopefully might have a little conference with you before it's over with.
Mm-hmm. All right.
All right.
All right. Appreciate the call. Thanks.
Yes,
okay,
sir. You
All right, I'm going to take just one more caller, and then we're going to close down because we're just about a quarter after, so we'll go a minute or two on the next caller, and then we'll pick back up next week. So next person is Linda from Virginia. You got the mic. We're going to try to keep it short, and you can always come back next week with more, but go ahead.
Okay, I had three things, but I'll just address one of them. My experience is that the only time government really fears anything is when there's a consensus of the people, you know, what you call critical mass, and that given the level of corruption...
Well, the critical mass will leverage us into power, okay?
Exactly.
But what's going to fear them, what these people will fear, the government will fear, is when the people control the courts of law and they control the political process. What is available to us, okay, in the way our government has been structured and the common law, what's available to us is total 100%, not 99.9, no, 100% government by consent.
I understand that, but we have to get there, and
right.
given
that's
the level of
the leverage to get there. Yes.
Given the level of corruption, they have no fear. Their platform, they're totally protected. They
didn't get the memo yet that the deep state is about to go down. They didn't get that memo.
And they're completely
shock hits them. They're going to say, it's going to hit them soon.
I don't know what else is going on, but I just look at, you know, what NLA is doing. And here, you know, you said yourself you had entire long list of filings by NLA that have been treated with, you know, complete disregard. And if there's something else going on that's going to, you know, resolve that, great, you know, but this way I see it is that the case you're doing now is attracting people who have current cases, you know.
Right.
They have some kind of issue. And any other person, like myself, I'm going to be real brief, you know, I have a case, I suffered harm, but I'm waiting to see if what they told me was a lie or whether they're going to do what they said they were going to do. And that would determine whether I have pursue a case, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So any other person, you know, may be following it, just interest, may be following it, but they're not actively participating. So my thing is this, there's an entire potential contingent of patriots and interested citizens that are not involved in a case per se, but would be interested in showing their support of the case. And so, you know,
right,
how
well,
do you do that?
Is this. Look, the key thing is this, and I don't know if you hear early, we're talking about this particularly, but every paper we served on the government going all the way back to 2015 is when we started to serve, you know, papers. And even though we didn't open a court yet, as far as we were concerned, court was open, okay? And when we did open a statutory number so that we can store our papers under the auspices of the court and also continue with our demand for them to show cause and to give us our due process and so on and so forth, that's just a continuation of the same case. And now the papers we just started filing it here at the end of August is the conclusion of our case that started in 2015. You see, we've been in court for 3 years. Let's see.
But there's a pattern here where they are completely ignoring it, you know.
It doesn't matter. You see, what you're missing here is this. Look at the deep state's going down. If you're not listening to, well, I can give you a couple places.
No, I'm listening. I know SR. What is it? SR-22 and all that. You know,
X-22 report. X-22. Yeah. But okay. But here's the thing. You see, it doesn't matter what they do. Okay, they get a little fear. They see our paperwork. Our paperwork intimidates them, and it should, because it's the law and they're breaking it. Okay. And they can ignore it. They can do whatever they want. They can throw our papers away. They can not read it. It doesn't matter. They've been served, okay? But the pressure of more papers, more cases, more truth, more facts, more light, okay, and more people, that pressure combined with losing their protection, which is the deep state, when the deep state starts to go down and people start to go to jail, that's when they're going to realize they no longer have protection for the maintaining of the status quo. Now,
well,
we're still
that
there,
hasn't
we're
that
still
people
filed.
Haven't gone people haven't gone to jail yet. There's no sign of that.
No,
and
no.
My question
but
is, are you going to have 30,000 cases under, you know, under this one case, you know, to show critical mass?
It would be great if we could. I have no idea how many cases we're going to end up with, but we'll put in as many as we can, and we'll continue to file. Again, it doesn't matter. You can ignore the law so much, but when the law finally is applied, they're going to have to pay the toll. And what they're doing is making it worse for themselves, because they keep breaking the law again and again and again. They're just adding more and more felonies upon themselves. Look, these people have robbed we, the people, of our heritage. We have lost our liberty. We have no power in the courts. We cannot get a court of justice. They do what they please. They make it up as they go, and they just don't care. Why? Because they got power and money. That's why. That's what they're getting out of this. But the day is coming. The wrath of God is going to come upon them also. And again, the wrath of God is just could be just the application of the law. You know, look, the Bible is clear to me, okay? There comes a point in time, and I do believe we're at that point in time, when nations will be judged.
Okay, but it could be 1,000 years before that happens. My point in this is...
That's just a possibility raised. I don't know, are you a student of the Bible? Do you have knowledge of that, making that statement that could still be 1,000 years away? All right, well, I'm kind of surprised, because from my studies of the Bible, it's become clear to me that I'm living in end times. That's very clear to me. My insight and understanding of the end times is quite different than most people that I've seen that talk in churches and different things that they claim that the prophets say and what's being applied and so on and so forth. A very different perspective. But nevertheless, they see it as end times, and I clearly see it as end times. And I see the judgments being applied upon the nations of this world. If you watch what Trump is doing, he's really out there with the olive branch, but he also got the stick, okay?
Yeah.
And he's gaining headway, okay?
He's awesome. There's no two ways about it. They usually get people in there, and they just, brainwash them and get them play along. So
Satan rules in the high places, okay? We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and wickedness in high places. Now, there's two high places. There's the spiritual high place, and there's the worldly or political high place. You want to find Satan, go to church. You know, he's already in the bar. We already know he's in the bar and other places of drugs or whatever. But go to church, because that's where the battle is, and you'll see it in the church. I've seen it ever since I became a Christian. When I started reading my Bible, I started to see Satan in this church. And there's the battle going on. It's a spiritual battle. And he's looking to seek those high places. And
I know. It's his plan. It's his plan. Okay. And I am his servant, you know. Okay. I know that. But for the here and now... For the here and now, my point is that it just seems to me like we need an avenue to allow these people to participate in like a show of force, a show of consensus, that it's just not, you know, I don't know whether it would be, you know, like a...
Well, you have another question coming up here. Let me finish off the other part, because you're bringing a different issue up. But let me make my finish.
No,
my point.
It's the same issue. It's the same issue. Okay.
Different answer. Hold on a minute. There's a different answer. Let me just finish my point on the spiritual power I'm talking about and the political power. If you look around the world, okay, and you want to say, where is Satan having the power and the authority? Well, you'll find him, the deep state, which is part of that process, but really the powers that be are above that. The people who control the whole world, which is about 100 to 200 families. They control the whole world. That's where all the evil's at, and that's what's going down. If that is being taken down, then Satan is being judged, and nations are being judged, okay? And that clearly is in the Bible, that will happen before the end will come. And I'm seeing that this probability is what's taking place. Now, going back to the second part, okay, which you're talking about people... what's your point on the people to become involved in some way, or
I was leading to is that there's this whole contingent of people who don't really have current cases, but are in support of this case to show their support. An avenue. I don't know whether it would be a petition
Let me address that. We have just spent. Let me see, go back 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 5, 7. You go back 7 years, okay, and maybe a little longer than that, because we were doing the committee man thing, and it was 2013 when we moved over into the judicial side of things. But so we go back quite a bit, and we've been building up our membership, getting people involved. We've really communicated to all the states and have brought membership into all the states. We've organized. The first order of business really is organizing, communicating within that organization, and educating. So if we want to do something, if we want to save this nation, first order of business is to become part of the process and start becoming educated. Because if you don't have that education, if you don't have the knowledge, okay, you can't do anything. You don't even know what to do.
But do you have 30,000 people who are doing that?
Well, that's where we're trying to get to. We've got 7,700 people, but not all of those people are getting educated, and I'm constantly trying to stimulate them to get educated. And then when we get the critical mass, if we get a critical mass with a couple of 100,000 people, out of that I'm sure we'll get 30,000 people that will become, educated and involved and start taking the power. Because that critical mass would mean, when that landslide comes in, that's saying that we've accomplished a certain goal that people are seeing, and they see the power, and they see and understand what we're trying to do, and they want to participate. That's the only thing that will drive the critical mass. Other than that, it'll just be a trickling, as it's been over the past 7-8 years or so. It's a trickling of people coming in, but again, people fall asleep, and sometimes they wake back up again, and so on. But it's this simple. If the people want to be free, and they want their liberty, and they want this country to be great again, then they need to become educated. And
but you know,
in that process, they need to be organizing, being educated, and they need to be talking to each other and on a grassroots level. And that's what we're trying to get going. It's up to the people to do it.
My point is this. There's a whole contingent of people who would show their support, but they don't have an avenue to show their support.
Well, if we have to get something in order to come in and take control of their nation and their life and to save this nation, to bring back law and order in this country, if we have to give them something in order for them to do it, then they don't deserve having it. And then we as a people don't deserve having it. But look at this thing that we're doing with the courts as far as joining cases, that has never been the drive of National Liberty Alliance. We started doing that, and we only started doing it a couple of years ago, and we only did it for two reasons. Number one, we were figuring, well, okay, let's just do habeas corpus and non-judicial foreclosures, keep it very simple, because and also the family courts, because we felt compassion for the people losing their homes, losing their children, their family being destroyed. Okay, and or people sitting in jail and they can't get out and they're not getting their due process, and we did habeas corpuses. So we did it for that reason, number one, but there was also another reason we did it for, to accumulate evidence. See, every case is evidence of what we're talking about, every single case. So it played a role. Now, here's the problem. The people that came in to and got involved in the past, mostly some people were already members, they had problems, and we helped them. But then people started to come in to get the help, but they were not giving anything back. They weren't getting educated. They weren't coming to our Monday night meetings. And all they were interested in coming in, dealing with it. Maybe they didn't understand what we were doing. I'm trying to explain to the people what we're doing. Now we require participation. If people want our help with their case by joining, we require your participation. We require that you become a supporting member. $5 a month or more, nothing big, but you become a supporting member and you get active and get educated by taking the
– you know,
if they don't do those two things, we're not doing their case.
But that's just the people that have personal situations. My point here is I believe
– but there's a lot of people. Look at people who are driving this program. All of the active members that are driving this program, they don't have cases. They're not here for that.
But their consensus is not shown anywhere for this case.
What's your solution? Because I don't understand what you're saying. But what do you mean that?
I'm not naming the solution necessarily, but I'm saying what could be used for all those other people to show their support of this case. You know, I don't know. You've mentioned. Let me just throw something out there. You've mentioned papers like Friends of the Court papers. You know, maybe they could have something like that and have all the other people that don't necessarily have cases sign this paper.
Well,
I don't know.
We're about if people don't get the message. If people are not getting the message, America is about to be lost. Okay, it doesn't matter what Trump does. If Donald Trump is successful, and I do believe he's going to be successful, and takes down the deep state, and they all go to jail, and maybe even some of them hang, and they're gone, and you get rid of all of that darkness, okay, that's not going to change it in the future. We're only going to end up right back to where we're at. Why? Because we're not getting the blessings of God.
Well, you know, that whole thing.
hold on. I want to finish this point. Okay, they're not getting the blessings of God because they're not interested in getting under His law. They don't understand what their true heritage is. They don't understand that the liberty is being lost not only to them but for their posterity too. That their children are going to be in a worse shape than that they are in. Why? Because we are not taking control of our government. How do you take control of your government? We have government by consent, and that's what we're trying to teach the people. If they're not getting it, then they're not getting it. But I don't know how else to explain it. You got to get educated. You have to understand what's going on. You have to understand our history, our heritage, and what the law is, and we need to bring it back because you don't have a constitution anymore. It is gone. It's done.
Yeah, but
and
the dynamics, the dynamics are that the people that – that do surface are the people, largely, are people who have issues, you know, people that don't have issues.
We have done a whole bunch of family court stuff, and all of those people are gone. Where are they? You see, there was emotional for them.
No, I don't think they're gone. I don't think they're gone. But
I ask for all those people next Monday to get on the mic. I'm going to very particularly ask only people who have issues that they've been in the family courts, they've lost their children, and we're trying to help them get it back, and they're not seeing the success that they thought that they would see because they're not listening when we tell them, look, this is going to take time. And just because we file something in the court, it's not going to be the day after there's going to be sunshine and lollipops. It's not going to happen. It's an uphill battle. And if you're
I believe those people would support this case if they had an avenue to do that. But there is no avenue. There is no avenue.
Called an education and stepping up for what's right and just and bringing this country back on track. If that's not enough to
the education is a sideline that you should be doing, you know, continuously.
It's everything. Everything. Okay. If the people that are coming in here don't see that this country is in desperate shape and in need of the people for patriots to step up and take this country back, okay? That's the message we're trying to get out. And that's the message that people have to respond to, not the fact that we're helping a court case. We're not a bunch of lawyers. We're not in business doing this. We don't even have enough people to be doing what we're doing, but we're doing it in faith. And right now we're stuck in the middle of a bottleneck. It is what it is. And we don't have enough people volunteering to help to do these things. And you think the people that are coming into the court and getting help, well, don't you people think that you have a duty to do the same and help your neighbor? If we're going to help you, why don't you jump into the game and help us to help you and help others? Because that's how we will become successful. And until we get back to thinking as Americans again and getting our heritage back and being godly and morally minded and doing the right thing and taking control of this nation for our posterity's sake and our own sake and our neighbor's sake and for God's sake, if we're not going to do it under those levels, then we don't deserve anything.
But, you know, it goes back to what I said. The government doesn't fear anything unless there's a consensus of the people. You know, that's why they have the Second Amendment. Every time they want to distract the people, they drag out the Second Amendment or abortion or, you know, sexual harassment or something, one of those. That happens every time, you know. They keep the people distracted. So what works, though, is a consensus of the people, and that's what you want to get to, you know.
That requires knowledge.
Well, it does require knowledge, but that knowledge,
if I'm talking Greek and you're talking English, we can't communicate.
No, I went my whole life not knowing any of this, and then I started –
start talking about equity and law and the difference, and we talk about civil law and we talk about unalienable rights and due process and all these things, and people don't understand what I'm talking about, how can they save this nation? As Jefferson said, and this is the fundamental position and point of National Liberty Alliance. It's right on our front page. It's the words of Jefferson. If a people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen. Not in this world.
But for the most part, people don't seek that out unless they have a problem, or they're given.
But we got the Patriot Movement. We have a huge, huge place where we can go and get thousands and hundreds of thousands of people into the game. That's what we're trying to get a message to, is to the patriot, the person who sees the danger, who sees the damages, and understands that there's a conspiracy to take over this nation and totally destroy it, that we're up against enemies, both foreign and domestic, who have taken control of this country. You see, they know that, and they're frustrated, and they're angry, and they don't know what to do.
What
I'm trying to say is the essence and very important to what we're talking about, and you're not even letting the end point of what I'm trying to make go by and get out there, and it's not for yourself, for the other people who are listening into this conversation. Look, we have to take control of this nation. The patriots know it. If we get our message to the
people, I don't think there's a person out there that doesn't know that the people don't have...
All right, hold on. I had to mute you, okay, because you keep talking when I'm trying to finish off on this, and I'm going to give you opportunity to speak, but when I answer the questions, you got to let the whole thing go out there. Look, if we get the message to the people who know that there's a problem, okay, they don't necessarily have a court case. They may or may not, but they're not motivated by that. They're motivated by the fact that they want to save America. They want. So we got to get a message to those people. Those people are primed. And that's what we're trying to do right now, and that's where critical mass will come. When those people see that what consent of government actually means and how it can be accomplished and how we can require obedience by all of these people in power, both in the courts or just in the other political realms there, to require their obedience to the Constitution and to fear the people, okay, that's what we can accomplish, but that's what has to be done. And again, if the people are here for another reason, then yeah, there are people that come in here with their court cases because they're suffering and they're hurting, but they don't even understand that this government, this nation is teetering on the edge, about to be destroyed. But again, things have changed since Trump is in, and I see it the other way around. It's only a matter of time now. I see opportunity now. I'm surprised that we came to where we're at. I never expected a Trump. I never expected to see anybody doing what he's doing, but he's doing it. But the people are primed for it. Okay. So yeah, we get the wrong people come in here, and as they don't have no desire to get educated. They don't understand that the nation's in peril, and they're here for their own reasons. Like we had a caller who says, well, you know, make sure here's my number of my case, please make sure when this case gets resolved, you give me a call and let me know. No, you come here and you listen and watch and follow and learn and get educated. We're not here for that purpose. We're not here to serve that kind of a purpose. We're here to serve the movement to take this nation back and bring it back under a court of law, which is our heritage. That's what we're here for. Okay, let me unmute you and you can finish. Where did she go to? Did she disappear? All right, I don't see her here anymore. So, wait a second. No, I don't see her. Was that Linda from Virginia? Let me unmute you.
I'm here. Yes, I'm here.
So anyway, look, we have the plan. Maybe I'm not good enough in articulating this. Maybe we need someone else to articulate the point better than I can, because I'm doing the best I can.
I want to speak to the education part of it, because before something happened to me, I knew nothing about any of this, and it took a lot of time. It takes a lot of time, and I'm still feel like I'm just beginning to understand the concepts here. So it takes a tremendous amount of effort and tremendous amount of time for somebody to come up to speed on, you know, on a lot of these concepts. So that, like I said, that's done over time. And,
well, that's why we want to change the active patriots. That's who we want. We want to get, because the active patriots have been through this. They've seen, they've looked at the documentaries. They see the destruction. They see what's going on. They see the New World Order coming. They're locking
yes,
and loading.
Yes, but do you think you're going to get critical mass with just patriots?
Huh?
Do you think you're going to get critical mass with just patriots?
From the patriots? Absolutely.
No, I said just patriots.
Absolutely.
Maybe.
Do I think that we're going to get critical mass from just
patriots? Are there 100,000 of them? I don't know.
Millions of them. Yes, there's millions of them. Go on to YouTube and go look at, start watching some of these channels that are informing the people. Go look at the Q movement. Look at the past Ron Paul movement that had built up and got behind Trump and I follow Rand Paul.
I follow a lot of what he does. Yeah.
Well, I'm talking about Ron Paul though. Now look at, you go back and you go out onto YouTube and you start looking at the channels that are really giving some good information and news and explaining what's going on and the problems and the conspiracy.
But, you know, that's the other side of this, is there are a lot of channels and people are tuned in to different channels, not necessarily following.
They don't, there's none of them that have a solution. They're all watching Trump. And they think the vote is going to get them what they need to get. And to some degree, they're right. But it's not going to keep it for them. It's not going to take it back.
Right. This is an ever-present evil thing.
Outmessage to the patriot gives them something to do, and they'll get it. They'll get it quicker than the person who has no knowledge of this stuff and is stuck in the court and comes here and decides not to get educated. Call me when my number comes up, so when you make a decision, I'll know about it. Well, then... we're not interested in really look at. I tell Jim, and Jim and I, Jim agrees with me and understands this. We're as interested as in someone's cases as they are. You know, we're not any more than they are. People come in and they'll put in, and we've had this. People come in and want a case to be done, and then they disappear. Then they come back and they disappear, and they're just wobbling back and forth. And all of a sudden, the fire's really roaring. And Friday, they're going to jail, and they come now and they want us to do something. We can't do nothing. You should have done that 3 months ago when you started this whole process. You should have got educated. And for the person who has not been caught up into the court system yet, let me tell you, go get educated now before you do, because the day is coming. Now, maybe not so much as it was before because of what Trump is doing. Again, I see there's a whole change now. There is victory in the air.
Not to the judicial system yet.
But that's the point. That's the point. Look at these judges continue their evil. They are silent. They are silent. Why are they silent? Because they're guilty and they know they're guilty, but they got protected. They're doing the status quo. They are protected. Okay? When they find out that they're no longer protected, it's going to be a whole new story. And that's the day that we're working towards.
Yeah.
Believe me, the pressure is on them, just not yet, because they haven't got the memo yet that the deep state is going out. They haven't got the memo yet. And if you listen to Q, you can see these people still think they got control. They still think they got control. They don't have no clue. Their day's a number. They're done. Nothing can stop what is coming upon them. Nothing can stop it. And anybody paying attention knows that, okay? And that we're using that to our advantage, because that's when we're going to be successful. Okay.
Well, I will say that it will be nice if we really don't have to fix this and somebody else does. That would be nice, you know. But there's something else I want to mention.
No. I don't understand that. Look, if you go back and listen and read about our founding fathers, the real history. Get the real history. Forget about what they teach you in school, because that's all pabulum and BS. Okay, get the real history. Who was Thomas Jefferson? Who was Benjamin Franklin? Get back into real history and understand who these people were. And they talked about duty, okay? You don't be given liberty. You have to take that liberty. You got to protect that liberty. You got to keep that liberty. You don't get it and then kick back and say, I don't have to worry about
well,
it
anymore. Well, I compare what they said. There's as like infallible, like the Bible. Everything they said stands, you know, it just stands up to attack and it prevails. So
of
you know,
even in truth, it's self,
you know,
what they had to say is self-evident truth. Any person that is being honest to themselves and thinks straight knows that's self-evident truth. These things.
I mean, you read the things they say, and you just, I mean, who can argue with that? You know, it's like.
But that all comes from the Bible. It comes from Israel, ancient Israel. It comes from the Old Testament, ancient Israel, and it comes from the New Testament, Jesus Christ. Okay, that's where all this comes from. That's where they were, and they studied under great preachers and teachers. Okay, who were very very strong Bible students, okay?
I just find the stuff that they said, I just find awesome. In their day, you know, that they would have been able to put that together. It's just amazing. But
God put that together. America, look at America is today's Israel. Okay, that's what America really is. But we've lost our way. We've fallen away. We've been demoralized. But God's children are still here, and it's time for them to step up. And those are the people we need, as much as anyone else, of course. But those are the people that we really need to understand the history and the common law and all these things. But again, if people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen. But it's time to go. So it's really, really late.
There's one last thing I want to just throw in here real quick. You know, I'm a strong advocate of videos in the courtroom. Some courtrooms have videos, some don't, you know. But I just watched a man in Florida who is sort of leading his own case or whatever, just put on a live 360 video for a mayor debate, and I wasn't thinking anything about it, but when I went on there, I realized that what that technology does is you can take your own camera, your own cell phone. Once you connect to the video, you take your own cell phone and you can pan completely around the room. You can look at whoever you want to look at. You can go floor to ceiling. I was looking at the ceiling because it was a very nice building, and I was looking at how the ceiling, you know, structure was made. But then, you know, I thought, oh, my goodness, you know, this is what we need in every courtroom and every public hearing so that any person – it's almost like you're actually there, you know.
Well, Court TV is on its way here. There's been a working behind the scenes on that, and so that's going to happen. But of course, there are always some cases you can't televise. But these cases, for sure, you definitely should.
Where we are, they don't even let us take cell phones in, you know, much less videos. There's no videos.
I got to go, but they don't want you to record the crime. Of course not.
I just feel like there's the level of horseplay that goes on in those courtrooms without videos is, you know, way higher than the ones that do have them, because it keeps them accountable.
Okay. I got to shut down, though. It's just way too late, and you've been on a long time. So,
okay.
All right, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
and,
thanks for the discussion. Okay.
Okay. All right. Lord willing, we'll be back next Monday. Thanks, everyone, for coming. Get active, and let's do what we got to do. Get educated. We need to get educated, and we need to work towards that critical mass. Good night.